Hey, you guys, welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. It's episode 170, 169, something like that. What are we up to? 168. I was off by 2.5. So listen, you guys, this is what I'm going to do on this episode. You know that thing I have been doing, and I'm going to try to do more of, where I analyzed my first album, Revenge for the Holocaust, and then I did it with Tom Segura for his amazing album, Thrilled. Well, I'm going to continue doing that. Kyle Kinane said he was into it. Rogan said he was into it. I'm going to ask Gaffigan and a few other people. But before I do those, I did it with Bert Kreischer on his first CD, Bert. Now, I listened to this CD. I asked Bert to do it. And then I listened to the CD. And the CD is awful. I mean, it is just, it's just a punk kid trying to fucking record. For what? For what? You got nothing, bro. You're not that good. And it really upset me. Not so much that Bert would give me this album. That I didn't mind. And I was worried. When we talked, I was like, ugh, how am I going to, like, at first I thought of, like, as I listened to it, I thought of, like, canceling and just telling Bert, like, oh, man, I can't, some shit came up. Because, like, what's the other options? Telling the guy that fucking his CD sucks? That he's just some punk kid who thinks he's better than he is? It made me hate myself. That's what it did more. It made me hate myself. Because I knew that's exactly the kind of comedy I did. The fucking, yeah, I said it. That's right, I'm white, but I know shit about other cultures. And I had just learned that information. Like, I had just figured out from TV. It's not like I have Indian friends or Asian friends or black friends. I mean, definitely not black friends. But, like, why would I think I'd be the expert on race relations? God, I was a fucking asshole. I asked Rogan this once, Joe Rogan, on his podcast, the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. I had just started headlining on the road. Joe always tried to get me into places, wherever we did, even just the clubs. And I get not the Tempe Improv, a 400-something seater. I get not that. But those small, like, 280-seaters, he would ask the club owners, he was like, what about Ari, you know? He must have off weeks. He's killing. What about Ari? And they'd be like, I don't know. It's, you know, it's a tough schedule. And, man, it was frustrating. I couldn't get into anywhere. And I thought I deserved it. Anyway, so one day I was headlining, and they had some feature opening for me, and it was just like, I just saw myself in them. I just saw where I was when I was opening for Rogan, and I was like, oh, that's exactly like I was. Just, you're getting some laughs, but everything you say is just typical. Hacky has two definitions, two connotations. It means stolen material, which is like, that guy's a hack, he steals jokes. But then it's the other way, it's just, it's hacky. It's just hacky material. It's just like, I don't know. It's just like, yeah, I've heard it. Not exactly that, but I've heard that thing before. I've heard that type of thing. I can't tell you exactly where, but I just heard it a bunch. Jokes like the Crocodile Hunter. For a while, Crocodile Hunter bits were humongous in comedy. And that's why I think guys like Martin Lawrence sucks. Because he once was in the comedy clubs working out, and now when he does stand-up, he's still a talented comedian, but he has no idea what's fucking hacky out there. Because he doesn't see other comedians doing stuff. So when you see a Crocodile Hunter bit at the time, when it was big, it was fucking, like 25 comics in LA had bits about it. Survivor, when that was started, oh, they should make a Survivor in the hood. They should make a Survivor in the Middle East. They should make a Survivor. It's like everyone had their version of it. And it was just fucking hacky. And that's what I was. I was just hacky. And I think those club owners just realized. They're like, that guy, I mean, I get it, Rogan. He's getting laughs, but he's just such a boring, down-the-middle comedian. Oh, fuck, I hated myself after I saw that guy. And I asked Rogan, I was like, hey, man, when I start going on the road with you, he was like, yeah? And I was like, how bad was I? And he just started laughing. He's like, man, I saw potential in you. I was like, God, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. I was so bad. He goes, you weren't bad. You just weren't as good as you could have been. There's that first layer of comedy that a lot of comedians have to shed. It's right when you learn how to start doing well. I mean, the very first layer, there's no layer. You're just awful. And then you start learning how to do well. You become proficient at it. But you're just still like a rookie. You're just still like doing these things. It's like when a kid is like 4 and he's all cute. And then, you know, he's like 9 and he's just like losing his cuteness. He's just becoming like a regular kid, 9, 10, 11. But then like he still acts like a cute kid. Like he's still like, he still knows the move of a cute kid to be like, mommy, I want that. And playing all stupid. And he knows that'll get him stuff. But it's like it doesn't fit anymore because he's fucking 10. And you're like, why are you talking so dumb, kid? Might not be the best example because I think kids are horrible. But yeah, you just have to shed that layer. And I've seen comedians, good comedians, really good comedians I like, still have some of that first layer on them. I'm not going to go into who, but it's like you got to shed that, and it's hard. It's hard to, because you learn how to do well with that layer. With that style, you learn how to do well. And some guys never shave it. Some guys never take off that layer. And they continue to be sort of proficient, but straight down the middle, boring comedians. You'll get laughs. People will like you. But I saw Bill Burr once at the Irvine Improv, I think. It could have been Brea Improv. And it was one of those comedy juice nights. And might have been the last time I said I would go down there. When they gave me $30 at the end of the night, I was like, wait, I drove an hour and a half for this, and now I'm just going to drive an hour back for $30. I could have just gone to the Comedy Store for $15 and walked. But anyway, I saw a bunch of guys. Might have been Adam Devine, might have been on that show too before Workaholics. But Bill Burr went up, and he was entering the third level of his stand-up. And he wasn't killing with it yet. But man, it was interesting. I mean, let's say there were 8, 9 comics on the lineup that night. He was probably 5th most laughs. But that's all anybody was talking about on the way out was Bill Burr's set and what the things he was saying. I mean, I was hearing them as they were going. I like to just watch crowds as they go, like find a corner for myself and just trying to listen to them fly on the wall style. And that's all anybody was talking about was Bill Burr. He wasn't even there. It wasn't like they were saying, oh, you were so good. They were just talking about him and he wasn't there. He'd left after he went on. But it was like, man, it was interesting. It wasn't down the middle. And then he learned how to fucking kill with that. This was 8, 9 years ago. And then he entered this third stage where he's now, I mean, I hate comparison, but man, you got to at least argue he's the best comic in the world. I think he is. I think he's the best comic working today. I think he has been for the last 5 years. I think he's just swinging for the fences every time and hitting massive home runs, hitting for average and for power. And everyone's still talking about A-Rod. And like, dude, A-Rod hasn't been as good as he was. And here's some other kid fucking coming up, batting the 6th hole, hitting 320 with 41 home runs. Everyone's like, what? Talk about him. It's every year that guy hits for fucking average RBIs. Anyway, so what was I talking about? Oh, Bert Kreischer, how fucking shitboxy he was. Well, you'll hear it, you guys. Well, it turns out Bert knew that it was bad too. And oh, what a relief. Because I didn't lie to him. I didn't say I can't do this. But we both talked about it, about what it's like to record an album too soon, to feel it and want it, and then have the actual power to be able to do it, and they go, no, you're not responsible enough for this behavior. That's why there's statutory rape laws. That might not be the best metaphor. So anyway, let's start. Couple announcements. I'm going to China. The dates are on my website, arithegreat.com. You can also check out my Amazon link that's on there, right underneath the dates. If it doesn't come up, it's because you have your ad blockers on. go through my Amazon link. There's no sponsors the last fucking 5 weeks. So go through my Amazon links and do your Amazon shopping. Just regular Amazon shopping. But just click that link and then it takes you to Amazon. And then whatever you purchase, I get credit for. They help pay. They pay a percentage of their take to me. So please do that. Also, I am doing a festival in Denmark in the very end of September. I'm going to Calgary, like the third week of September. Oh, I'm shooting more This Is Not Happening storyteller shows. We're doing it for TV. We're doing it September the 8th, 9th, 10th. Definitely the 9th, and I think the 8th or the 10th, one of those. Definitely on a Tuesday, and then the Monday and Wednesday. So that's when we're doing them. I'm pretty sure that's finalized. So make your travel plans, and then I'll find a way to get tickets soon. But I'm going to Calgary to Yuck Yucks, and then right from there to Denmark. After Denmark, I'm going to go meet my brother. It's too early to go skiing again, so we're going to go to Oktoberfest. It should be fun. But then here's what I'm going to do. I want to spend 2 weeks in London figuring out London crowds, seeing what they're like, seeing what the comics are like. I've heard a lot about them, and to me, I feel like it probably boils down to three major cities for comedy: LA, New York, and London. And I want to, just like I moved here to New York, I want to test myself in front of a London crowd. I don't want to go all over the fucking country. I just want to do as many spots as I can pretty much in London. So here's the problem. People out there don't know me, which is fair. I haven't done anything. I just did my first TV set in 6 years, and I don't think it aired there. By the way, if you want to see my David Tell set, go to the Comedy Central stand-up app. Go download it for free, and you can watch it for free, the whole episode. I'm on episode 2. You can probably just do a search for Ari Shaffir, and it'll come up too. You need to have cable, though. If you don't have a cable provider, then you need to get someone else's password. That's what I did. Thank you, Russell Peters, for giving me your password. So here's what I need. If you guys live in the UK, call or tweet at the clubs to have me. I'm going to be there October 1st through the 15th. October 1st to the 15th, 2014. Just let them know that I'm going to be here and you would like to see me. That's the only way I know how to get booked in these places, because I've gotten like a few spots, but generally like it's off recommendation from Brendan Burns. They just don't know me. So help me out. If you want to see me play at a club, you know, fucking hit him up. Call him, tweet at him, and say, Ari Shaffir will be here. I would love to see him. Please book him. Something along those lines. I don't know which clubs are. I don't know even what the clubs are. I don't know where I'm supposed to get into. The Comedy Store, I guess. That's a good one. But anyway. All right, you guys. And I won't be bringing any sort of merch to London. So if you guys want anything, get it off my website, arithegreat.com. There's Skeptic Tank t-shirts, 2014 tour shirts in yellow and gray, girl sizes, fat people sizes, and everything in between. Grinders are coming soon. Okay, let's start the episode. Does it have anything else to say? I guess not. Don't forget to get Sam Tripoli's CD, Believe in Yourself. Went up to number 2 on iTunes. Number 2, that's amazing. All right, let's start. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 168. Bert, with Bert Kreischer. And God, you just, all right, you'll hear it. Oh my God. And I forgot. The reason we're doing this is because Bert's book is out, you guys. It's out right now. Well, it's out tomorrow when this comes out, but like, you can pre-order it. It'll just ship tomorrow. Bert, Life of the Party. Go to Bert Kreischer, Life of the Party. Go to bert.com /book if you want, and you can pre-order it right from there. He really worked hard on this book, and he was really, all the shit that was missing in this album, it seemed like he put into this book. Hard work, effort. So go to bert.com/book. Pre-order the book right now. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, buy the book right now. It's available on Amazon, everywhere, but just go to BertBertBert.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BN.com, Amazon.com. It's everywhere. But anyway, you can find all the links at BertBertBert.com/book. Get his book, Life of the Party. It's tons of fucking fun. The stuff you like Bert Kreischer for. The real Bert, where he fucking shows who he really is instead of just fake fucking bravado that he did in this goddamn album. Jesus, man. Get better and then record stuff. Get better. You guys are not as good as you think you are. I wasn't too either. I was terrible too. All right, you guys. So order it, okay? Let's start the episode. Are you fair, skeptic, think? Episode 168, Bert, 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 with Bert Kreischer, starting now.
That's the story of Bert's blanket.
That's the story of my blanket.
That's the story of Bert's blanket.
That's the story of my blanket.
That's the story of...
Hello? Okay, hello? Yeah. Hello? Yeah. We getting levels?
We're getting levels. Level. Yeah, we're good.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
I feel like I want to have a glass of wine so badly, but I know Leanne's going to say something.
If you have a glass of wine?
Yeah, because I have a busy fucking day tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. I have Amber Lion at 8:30. I have...
In the morning?
Al Madrigal at 10.
These are all morning things?
Yeah, podcasting. Tom Segura at noon. And then, are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Doug Stanhope at 4:45.
That'd be great.
Drinking into the sunset.
Here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I know. It's going to be a really fun one. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I have so much I want to talk about this CD about.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I haven't listened to this CD in
how long?
Probably, honestly,
yeah.
Since the day I edited it.
Really?
Yep. So, I learned how to edit on this CD.
On what did you use?
Music band, GarageBand.
GarageBand, okay.
But GarageBand on the white. Do you remember the white apples?
Uh-uh.
The white apples.
So what year was this?
This was, I didn't have Isla yet, so Georgia was 3, so it's probably 2006.
Okay, like 8 years ago.
8 years ago, and so I got it. This was my, let's do a little backstory.
Okay.
So it was taped at the Laugh Stop.
I was wondering, we're in Texas, and I'm like, where, how are you, what, in the compliments and insults is this to, you never say the town of Houston, Laugh Stop, the old Laugh Stop?
The old Laugh Stop.
Okay.
And so I'm like, I literally thought to myself, Stanhope did his there, Hedberg did his there, Tom Rhodes, like everyone had done a CD there, and they all sounded good, because they had it wired to do it.
It was a lot of places' favorite club. I remember when I heard like Rogan and Stanhope saying it was a favorite, or one of them. And then
it was
also, who was Marilyn Rice Cub's partner for a while? Karen Kilgariff. She called it her favorite club.
They were together?
Girls Guitar Club.
Oh, I thought you meant partner.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, interesting.
Although I could totally see that.
I almost said Duncan Trussell.
And her partner Duncan, that's right. Man, they were together for a while.
Like, a glass of wine can't be bad, right?
I would love to have a glass of wine.
That's okay, Ari.
That helps well, if you
want
to sway it at all.
If you want a glass of wine, then I'll open a bottle. I mean, Jesus, this is awkward now.
Yeah.
I wish I had a fucking twist top. Oh, did she fucking pull all the wine openers out of here?
It.
Here, hold this for a sec.
By the way, Bert Kreischer's new book is coming out tomorrow, May 27th.
Yes! Yes!
What's it called?
Life of the Party. Fuck yes.
Life of the Party. You can get it on Amazon and all the other places you got stuff. Kindle.com. All right, we're going to pause this while you find it. Boom.
Yeah, okay, we're back. I got a bottle opener. Wow, yes, man. My book, Life of the Party, comes out tomorrow. And can I say right now,
yes.
Dearest Death Squad family, thank you. Thank you. My book will be in bookstores because of the pre-orders.
Physical bookstores.
Physical bookstores.
Wow, like Crown Books? What's still around?
I don't know. Barnes and Noble.
Okay.
It is it was the
The bookstore in the airport is open. That's all I know.
Well, the bookstore's in the airport, I found out. Your book's only in there if it's a national bestseller.
Oh, fuck them.
But I don't know. I mean, I think I may be close. I'll tell you what. Here's what happens.
Yeah.
If Corolla's book is a national bestseller, I have a shot.
Why?
Because I'm tethered to his book on what people have bought.
Oh, really?
So it's like people also liked, and it's Bert, like I'm also there with him. So is another guy named Bald Brian. So like
Bald Brian?
He's on his podcast. And so if Kroll is the national bestseller, it gives me a shot.
You have a chance.
Yeah, because he's like 2 weeks before me. His book comes out Tuesday. My book comes out, or last two weeks ago.
All right.
So we'll see. We'll see if it gets into into like airport bookstores. I really hope so because I spend so much time in airports. But thank you, everyone, for pre-ordering my book.
That's cool.
All the annoyingness that I gave you this last 6 months about pre-ordering my book has paid off. It will be in Barnes & Noble. They just ordered an extra.
What were you going to do if they don't? You were just going to sell them like here or there?
Just like every comic. I mean,
are you publishing it yourself?
No, no. But you get deals. Books are weird. Oh. Books are, you know what? Very honestly, books are like this CD that we did.
In what way?
You do it yourself.
Yeah.
You do it yourself, and you make it. You deal with a publishing house, but it's just like Rooftop Comedy.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, we'll get it out, but it doesn't go in music.
Is that who you did it with?
Not Rooftop Comedy. I did it with St. Martin's.
St. Martin's?
Yeah.
No. The book you're talking about?
Yeah, the book.
Oh, okay.
No, I did this with nobody.
Okay.
There's so much backstory that goes into this.
Okay. How long into comedy were you when you did it?
Oh, by the way, go to a bookstore now and please buy my book.
Oh, right.
Okay, yeah. Now that it's in bookstores, please go to a bookstore and buy my book. Thank you
so much.
It'll
be starting tomorrow.
Tomorrow, Barnes & Nobles. It will be in Barnes & Nobles.
Okay.
Just find it. Life of the Party. And if they don't have it, can you order a copy for me? You don't even need to get it there. Just have them order a copy
for you.
And then
go buy it somewhere else.
Yeah, just go buy it somewhere else.
Yeah, get it on the bookshelf.
So I was in the group of comics that... No one made CDs.
What do you mean?
You had to be good to make a CD. But then technology caught up and everyone started making CDs. But I still was in that class, was like, no, no, no.
Someone has to give it to you.
You don't make a CD until you're good.
Right.
And like probably a year before I did this one, David Tell's Skanks for the Memories came out. And I will still say to this day, that is hands down one of the best CDs I've ever heard. Strategic Grill Locations.
Grill Locations?
That's Hedberg's.
Yeah.
So like they all had these great CDs and I wanted to have a great CD, but I wasn't a great comic.
Right.
So I had like a bunch of like what I thought were kind of thought together bits.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck it. And I had a kid and I had another kid on the way. And every comic you worked with was like, dude, you make a CD, you sell like an extra $1,000 on the road. And
yeah, people
like,
were saying that. I remember people saying that. Sulley McCullough would say that stuff. Gotta have merch, man. You had so much more. 40% more money you can make.
And so I was like, well, I want to sell CDs on the road. But I was like, no one would give me an offer. I was nobody. I was literally featuring, except for Dane fell out of the Laugh Stop and Pete Pirelli needed to fill someone in. And they thought I was similar to Dane, so they put me in. And Pete said, I like you. You'll start headlining here. This is my third time headlining, probably.
What? That's what you recorded?
Probably. Not my third time. My third time headlining. Like I had
third weekend.
Like third weekend headlining.
Wow.
So I had...
Oh, yeah. It seems pretty early.
It seems really early,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Georgia, I featured all of Georgia's first year of life. I started...
How'd you get by? Development deal money?
No, we were broke.
Oh.
That's why I made a CD. I was like, fuck, if I can make extra money. So I made the CD. I did like, this is a compilation of a weekend, except the majority of one show. The majority of one show is all Mexican.
You took it all for four shows overall?
I taped six shows.
Six?
I taped six shows.
Yeah.
And one show was really great. And I think it was the one show that was really great was the...
Late Show Saturday.
I think it was the Late Show Friday. You can tell at the very beginning of the CD because Bob Biggerstaff introduces me and says...
Oh, that's who he has, introducing you?
He says he has a TV show on Spike called Fresh Baked Video Games on 11 o'clock. It's Saturday, Friday nights. Please welcome. And I remember thinking, why would he give that intro? It's on right now. Like, right. It's going to be on while we're in this room. No one's going to get to see it. But Bob's Biggerstaff gave me the intro. And so... I did the six CDs. They gave them to me. And then I sat and I tried to figure out editing like beyond belief.
There was only a couple moments where I'm like, what was that? That was really... Glory.
That was me really trying. Like, I just had no clue.
Right.
And I was like, I thought I made a clean cut from one to the other.
Yeah.
Because I heard it too. And I was like, that's not a clean cut.
Yeah. And there's also... Oh, right. There's a few moments too where you're like, am I right, Nicole? Like, you'll do callbacks, but then it wasn't in.
Yeah.
So I wasn't getting it. I'm like, I don't know who Nicole is. You never set it up.
Oh, and then the other thing was, so wait, this is my third time headlining. So if you listen to this, you will hear me get excited for an idea that I have in crowd work in the moment, but I'm so fresh-faced at it that I get too excited to say all the words. So I start mumbling words.
Yeah,
I did it like three or four times where I'd be like, oh, look, we got a Frothy Frankenstein playing in. And I could not. It was like, it's like right when the time, because you had to do an hour in Texas. That was like the deal.
You have to do an hour everywhere.
Yeah.
It's my opinion.
So you want to just get into the
Okay, so how long into comedy were you? How many years do you know?
I started when I was 26. I was now 31.
So 5 years in.
5 years in.
Okay. I will tell you, as I'm listening to it, I'm like, wow, this is a beginner I'm listening to.
Yes.
Okay. I was like, let me look at when this was recorded. I forgot to look. But I'm like, this is...
What year was it recorded in?
I don't know.
I want to say, it's going to say, it can't be... It's got to be 2006. 2006 is when I recorded it. When I released it is different than when I recorded it.
How long did it take you to edit?
A fucking long time.
Could you listen to it right away?
No.
How long did it take you to be able to listen to it?
Oh, it took me like 6 months. Like, I after I did it, I sat with it forever because I was like, I can't. I barely could fucking sit through it.
The first time I recorded one, it took me like 4 months to even listen to it. And then when I listened to it, it was all popped out and sounded awful. I was like, oh, I can't even use it.
It is, and I like this because I like the humility of comedy. Like, I like looking back at your early stuff. And you know what's crazy? You know what's really fucking crazy? Is that a good chunk of these bits are Uncomfortably Dumb.
Oh, really?
But they're better, and they're well thought out. Because when I did Comfortably Dumb was 2009. So I was like, I've been doing comedy...
10 years?
10 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, I had 4 more years of doing these bits on the road.
You're seasoned now a little bit.
Yeah. And so... but yeah, it's you can totally see... And I'll say this, and I, and by the way,
let's see when this is. Yeah,
what does it say?
2007, released November 5th, 2007.
Yep, I probably taped it.
2006. Wow, you waited almost a year or more.
It took me fucking a solid 4 months to edit. Like you remember, like I couldn't figure out how to split a track. Like I had this whole thing, and I was like, fuck. And then I was like, in my head, I was like, I want to underlie like laugh tracks underneath it. But I didn't know how to do that. So I was like, fuck it. Whatever laugh I got. And so the reason I picked that show is there's one lady that laughed really
She laughed so goddamn hard, man.
And I was like, that's the best show.
She laughed so hard I could hear. I was going to ask about
her. And there was a bit of crowd work in there in this weekend that I wanted to include, but I couldn't because it didn't fit right because there was like it was a callback to something else. But a group of Mexican dudes had brought a cooler worth of beer in, and they were drinking out of a cooler. And
totally against the rules.
And by the way, and I had a huge Mexican following in the Laugh Stop at this time because the first time I went in, they thought it was going to be Dane, so they comped the room. And because Dane wasn't there, they comped the room, and it was all Mexican dudes. And they loved me.
Oh.
The next time I came back was Thanksgiving, and all the Mexican dudes came back on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
All of them. And they were like, we loved you the first time you were here. We're back. So I was just, I remember them telling me right away, you need to be a beer drinking comic. Like David Tell comes in, his bar tabs are through the roof, and we bring him back every time because of bar tabs. And I remember Tell saying the same thing roughly to me one time. And so I was like, all right. So I'd go in, and my whole thing was just beer drinking. Talk about booze.
And get them to drink.
Get them drinking.
Yeah, that's so unhealthy for development.
You'll hear it in this CD. Because, by the way, it's Late Show. Now I'm buzzed, and I'll get a good idea, and you'll hear me stumble through it.
There's a couple moments I heard you stumble.
Oh.
There's a couple moments I heard you stumble. Let's start with the first track. I guess.
Hold on. Let me see what my notes on the first track are.
Okay.
I've seen him on Comedy Central. He had a show on FX called Hurt Bird. He's got a show that comes on actually tonight at 11 o'clock on Spike TV called Fresh Baked Video Games. Big round of applause for Mr. Bert Kreischer.
Yourselves for making the decision not to smoke. You are the future of Texas. The rest of the shows, they're going to be dead in 5 years, but you guys, you're the only show I care about because you guys will definitely be here next year when I come back. Looking the same, no one's going to age, you're all going to look beautiful like you do, smiling. You might get into drugs, I'm not sure. You got that look, like fun, crazy, hey, I don't know about me, I don't know. Man. I have that look too, I did drugs, I don't do them anymore. So I'm a father. Yeah, yeah. But let's talk about drugs first. Latinos! I wish I was let's not get fucking wild, guys, okay? Don't scare the white people, they're buying the expensive drinks. We can sell Budweiser's all week, it's the Crown and Cokes we're worried about. Look at this, what is that, a Kahlua and frothy shit? Holy shit, sir. I think a $10 drink. I'll have the laugh on your knees and put it in my ass, and then they go, hey, make one of those. Look at this. This is fucking top notch, right? What is that? What is that? What is that? Is that Kahlua? What is it? It's Bailey's. Bailey's, holy shit. Look at that. Ooh. What is it? These are Bailey's. There we go. Rolling on Budweiser. Okay. What?
Raspberry something.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is. It's 12 bucks. It's gotta be good. Fucking white people. I'm one of them. I can talk about them.
Well, first of all, this is the... why did you put the credits? Why did you leave all that stuff, the credits, into your intro? Where he's like, he's on this show, he's going to be on that show.
Because everyone's like, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because Stanhope had done a Tell's intro for
Skanks.
For Skanks for the Memories, and it sounded so fucking cool.
What did he say about him?
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Dave Attell. And they went nuts, and I went, I want people to go nuts.
Yeah, but what was it with all the credits, though? All the
TV
shows.
I told Bob, I go, Bob, when you get up there, tell him I'm recording. Tell him I'm fucking, like, tell him to give me a big round of applause. And he's like, okay. So he tells him that. And then he goes, all right, well, here we go. You may see this guy. And I'm like, motherfucker, we're dating the shit out of this.
Oh, yeah.
But so at the very first track, let's see.
Is Spike TV even around anymore? It still is, right?
Yeah. Balls right on stage.
You talking about your chin?
Oh, I wrote that joke that night there.
Really?
Yeah, I wrote that joke because I just shaved clean.
Yeah.
And
you thought your double chin.
And my double chin was regressive, and I had played...
Regressive?
It was so bad, dude, if you see a picture of it.
What does that mean, regressive?
Aggressive. Oh. And so I wrote that joke on stage, and just so you guys know, the tag to that joke that I have used since is...
Yeah.
It's my balls on the chin, and I go, yeah, you don't even notice it until you're at a bar having a good time giggling, but everyone else, it looks like you're teabagging your shirt. So that's the tag to that joke.
That's way better.
All right.
In this intro, by the way, too, you do this thing where you go, I have a family now, but so I have to talk about that. But first, let's talk about drugs. And then you just go, Latinos.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, where's the drug? There was no drugs. But first let's talk about drugs.
That's another thing I would do. Is
immediately
I would,
don't get to what you say you're just going to get to.
The reason I don't get hammered on stage anymore is I do, when I get hammered, I do a lot of setups and not a lot of punchlines.
Oh, man. It was like, what? You just said you were going to talk about, so maybe Latinos, and then talk about their drug. Just nope. It's Latino stuff.
I don't even think I talked about drugs the entire time.
I don't think you did.
I don't think I talked about drugs once.
Oh, you're right.
I don't talk about drugs this entire time.
That's so weird. If you were better editing now, you would have just taken that part out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there was no ability to take a word out. I had no idea how to do that. Now I can do it. But, like, I had no idea. I literally knew how to know when the bit was done, cut it, and then save it, and then go, all right, now when the next bit starts. And so for this show, I think it's seamless for like 4 bits,
yeah,
and then it has to stop at some point. I forget where, but you will definitely know where I edit in a new part of a different show.
Because it's not clean at all.
It doesn't sound clean at all. It
yeah,
sounds
it's tough
like
a layover. When my editor, my CD was like, no, you just got to go periods of silence. Laughs over laughs. It's going to go real well together.
Yeah.
But there's some points where you're like, you didn't get any laughs off this.
It's like,
come out of it.
Yeah, it's like,
you go straight to a moan, mid-moan.
Yeah, mid-moan.
What?
Drugs. Latinos. And I was super insecure because I always
had... Was that an edit from that, or was that just you on stage?
Just me on stage, editing myself. Because I was like, I want the Latinos to really respect me. Because it was filled. It was fucking filled.
Really?
It was filled with Latino people.
I did that
Mexicans.
Last stop once, and... they had these new keypads for the waitresses that they could. And I thought
that.
I saw one flash. I thought they were flashing the light at me, like waving it back and forth. But it was just some woman like putting in her shit, and I got off real early.
Really,
I was positive they were just like just waving it at me.
I remember Pete told me that he goes, "I had fucking Daniel Tosh in here. Yeah. Guy did 45 minutes." I said, "You know what? You owe me 15 on the next show." And Tosh said, "Go fuck yourself." And he goes, "I'll never work that guy again." Well, Laptop's not around, and Tosh still is.
Yeah, Tosh is like, even if it was around, I wouldn't do it. I'm way too big for that. I love those moments. All right. So now this first bit, this Bert bit.
My name's Bert, everybody. I know what you're thinking. Hot, sexy name. Do you do porn? No, I don't. Bert is the last name you want to hear during sex, people. Trust me, some chick on top of you in the dark all, ow, 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 ow.
Bert? Bert?
Ow.
Bert?
Ow. Shut up. I'm silent during sex. Silent like Helen Keller. Silent. You remember who that was? You remember seeing the movie? And then she freaks out just. I do that during sex. It's a great way to get a chick to leave the room if you don't want her to spend the night. 5 minutes in, when you're done, just. She's like, I'm gonna get my stuff and go. The worst part about that joke, and is that when I go shut up, and then I go like this, and I know you guys are laughing. I know you're just laughing at my double chin, but it's so odd. I hate having a double chin. It's like my real chin has balls. I tried growing a beard to cover it up. Is that what you do? Yeah, you shave that off. You look like the first guy that goes in a prison rape. That fresh shaven face? If you're going to prison, grow a beard. That's rule number one. I can't, because as soon as I grow a beard, I play with it all day long, you know? Like, you're like, oh, really? Well, that's interesting. Oh, interesting. And then at the end of the day, it smells like balls, and you're like, what the... smell ass, and they're like, I think it's your face. We didn't want to say anything. It's really bad. Will you shave, please?
Dude.
Yeah.
The first time I told that joke, it gets a fucking huge laugh.
Bert.
New York.
Yeah.
New York, it was like the first joke that I had where I was like, all right, this is a good stock pit.
I saw you do this at Dublin's.
Oh yeah,
one of the probably the maybe the first time I saw you.
Uh huh. That was my stock joke, and I remember I told it like maybe 10 times in New York.
About your name, about how your name sounds.
My name sounds like a fart. Just Bert, and it was because I could say Bert weird Bert. Mm-hmm. And I remember after the 10th time I told it, I was like, I finally have a bit that works every single time. And I got off stage, and Jim Norton was sitting in the back, and he goes, ugh. You're going to keep doing that Bert joke? And I was like, oh, motherfucker. But yeah, and then I used to get...
The problem is it really is one of those bits where it's like, it's just because of the way you're saying it. Not because... Miles Giobrani had a bit like that, where he's talking about how cheers is like a really shitty, like sort of gayish way to say, you know, whatever. He goes, Russians, they go, salute, salute. Yeah. And I'm like, you're just saying it tough.
You're just
and he's saying cheers, going, cheers, cheers.
Bobby Kelly used to have a big bit about like all the towns in New York sound really tough. Yonkers, Brooklyn, the Bronx. And he goes, you go to Boston, you're like, Massachusetts, Sawgrass.
But it's just the way he's saying
it's it. The way you say it.
Saugus. You could say it like August. That totally. You could, oh, those bits I remember just going, what are you, you're just faking it. You're not proving what you think you're proving.
And the best part of that bit is not in that show, but I used to get, for the longest time, for like a solid month, I would say, do you remember the movie The Miracle Worker where Anne Frank taught Helen Keller how to speak? And I didn't know it was Anne Sullivan. For a month, I would say Anne Frank, and it would get the biggest fucking laugh. I was like, I don't know. I guess when I bring it up, they think it's hilarious. Until one time, someone said, idiot, it's Anne Sullivan, not Anne Frank. And so then I go into this big bit about Anne Frank and Helen Keller sitting in a fucking closet. But in this bit, I just go straight to like, I go, my tag for this one was, it's a great way to get a chick to leave your room if you don't want to spend the night.
Going,
I was obsessed with, like, here's the thing that you'll notice
you
about
were, like,
my
tough guy comics, sort of.
Who, what, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's so not like... me. Oh, dude, I had no idea who I fucking was. 5 years in, and I thought I was a headliner. Yeah. 5 years in. I mean, think about where you were 5 years in.
I'm still working at the Comedy Store, like working there.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, no, I'm ready to headline. I'm so good.
Everybody's ready to headline before they are. They're like, enough, give me my shot already.
Yeah.
I'm so good.
And I remember
you
saying,
"You can hear the laughs I get.
You can hear me doing not even my real voice now. Like my real voice on stage is very real me, but you can hear me like I like I'm doing a mix of like Attell, Brewer, like anyone who just sounded good on stage.
Yeah,
you'll hear me doing a like almost like
impressions of them.
An essence stealing of Dane, and later in the album, a sincere essence stealing of Dane.
A Steve Byrne like essence stealing.
But yeah, let's see.
Well, I was going to ask you if you, but now it's like, all right, did you lead off with self-deprecation of like that burp stuff? How like, did you, for a reason, or did it just develop that way to like early on in your act?
It was a way to, it was like my icebreaker. It was my, I remember Jeff Ross said, I know you think I look like Barney Rubble and whatever took a pee on me and had a baby and took a pee on me or whatever. You know, like that everyone had that. You're thinking of this haircut. I just went to the barber and said, fuck it.
Right.
You know, like, and I wanted one of those. Because at the time, I was very New York comic still, and I wanted to emulate what I had seen these guys do.
Where'd you work out in New York?
The Cellar, or no, the Boston Comedy Club, and then the Cellar one night. I got passed by Manny one night, and I was already living in LA. I was like, fuck.
Oh, really?
I was like, if I had stayed here, I would have, if you had passed me earlier, I'd never be in LA. I'd just be a New York comic. I would have fucking loved it.
I don't think I ever met Manny.
I think he had passed by the time you went out there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But his son's out there, and Estes, I think, still
Who's
out
his
there.
Son?
I can't remember his name right now. Is it?
Is that his son? Is his son?
He hangs out with Bobby, like up in that
upstairs.
Noam,
the non-Jews call him.
The... Where was it? Was that...
If you self-deprecated on purpose just for them to...
Yeah.
For them to get like, okay, cool.
I was so uncomfortable with the fact that I assumed because they were Mexican, they would not like me. So I had one of two angles, and it was either like make fun of me, or make fun of them. Like it was like I don't know, but that burr joke was like my bread and butter.
Man, a crush of Dublins.
Yeah,
it's a crush of Dublins.
Hey, I used it this weekend.
Really?
Someone was saying something. I'm going through this new bit about right now about. My wife is vocal during an orgasm, and I'm not.
Yeah.
Because my grooming for orgasms was always silent in a bathroom by myself.
Try to be quiet. Try not to get caught.
I said, even still to this day, when I have an orgasm, I don't say anything. I just listen for footsteps. and then I threw a bird in there for.
Here's what I do when I'm by myself. It's all quiet. Then at the end, it's like. And then that's it. Just that one little, yeah. And then we're good. Oh, man, I'm getting sweats. Eating only candy and potato chips all day.
Oh, I've been eating a lot of candy.
Really?
Yeah, they had a candy shop in Dallas Airport, and I thought there. And I was like, fucking, I got Swedish fish.
Can I tell you a story about that candy shop?
Yes.
all right, we'll go to the next track, but here's the story of the candy shop. There was this girl in Dallas at the Addison Improv who wrote me at my Facebook fan page. And I used to have this bit about hooking up with young girls.
Yeah.
Really liking young girls. And then she wrote me and said, like, hey, I'm a young girl. She was like 19 or something.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm into you or whatever it was. I didn't see it till I left. I didn't check my Facebook fan page, the messages back then.
Yeah.
Right now. And so we just sort of went back and forth, and she was like, I don't know, you know, sent me pictures and stuff. Do you know how any of this works anymore? Have you been married too long?
I've been married way too long.
You've been married since pretty much pre-cell phone, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No, I had cell phones, but not pictures.
Never smartphones? Okay.
You couldn't take a picture on it.
Yeah, so then that's the next development. You go up, whatever. Anyway, so we started talking. It was like, well, look, I don't know when I'm going to be back in Dallas. It's going to be a year, at least, until I get back there. And meanwhile, it's been 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So we agreed that I'll just do a layover, and she'll pick me up in a car. We'll just fuck in a car. And then go back in my layover. But then she found a guy's house who lived like right near the airport. So she just picked me up one day, gave me a bowl. We smoked. We fucked for like an hour and a half. And then she dropped me back off on my layover. And I went to that candy shop. I had just enough time to go to that candy store and buy a bunch of candy and take it back onto the plane with me. And I remember thinking like, wow, Ari, you've really made it. Like, this is really, I can't imagine a better flight.
You told 18-year-old me.
Yeah, that would happen. And the candy.
I'd fucking some strange dude's house, smoke a bowl,
yeah.
And then be in a candy shop, and I have money to buy all the candy I want.
Yeah, it was pretty magical. I know that candy shop.
Yeah, I went in there, I bought like fucking $40 worth of candy.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I made it rain.
Yeah. it's hard. You keep scooping out more of them. Anyway, all right. Let's get to this next bit. First beer of the night.
Oh, wait, this is my first sip of the night. Not of the day, but of the night. I love this beer. This is my favorite beer because beers are filled. I don't know if you know this. Do you know? You may not know this because you drink raspberries and limousines. Beers, you know this, are filled with dreams, aren't they? They start whispering to you the second you open it. And you're like, what? Oh, this is gonna be the best night ever. Are you serious? We're gonna have such a good time. We're gonna find a midget, and he's gonna have a Camaro, and he's gonna be wearing overalls, and we're gonna drive out to the desert, and we'll be doing the robot, and the aliens are gonna come. Oh man, let's just keep drinking again. But then at the end of the night, they're still filled with dreams. They just aren't those dreams that are ever gonna come true. You know, they're like you ever talk to a stripper on coke? And they tell you those, I'm going to go back to school, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to be a nurse, I'm going to be the best mother ever. And you're like, just dance, bitch. This ain't Dr. Phil.
My only question is, when did you write this in your development?
Why did I write smoking? Oh, here's what I said. In that thing, I by the way, and I said this, I don't know when I said this, but I was like, thank you for not smoking. Yeah. This was back when they used to smoke in that club, and it used to make fucking stand-up so difficult, because you'd be out of breath.
Oh, really? Yeah, you're breathing in so much smoke.
You'd be out of breath by the end of the week. Oh, so I love the non-smoking shows.
Oh.
But the first beer of the night, all of my jokes at that time were written at parties. Like, I would be at parties, and I would make a joke to friends, and they'd think it was funny, and I'd write it
down. Going
into
the act.
Yep. I was like, done. And I remember opening a beer, and it was with a group of people.
First beer.
Opened a beer, and I went, what? And he said, oh, my God. He said, take your dick out. And everyone goes, who? I said, my beer. Wait, yours has the secret, too. And then I popped it, and he goes, what? And I was like, oh, my God, you should fuck Tony. And everyone started laughing, and they're like, wait, my beer is a secret. And we started fucking around, and literally right in the act.
Wow.
So many jokes at that time were at parties. I wrote them at a party and then just brought them on stage.
Yeah.
Because I was a funny guy at the party. I was always a funny guy at the party. And I was like,
there is some of that where it's like, I guess I can try to use this in front of people. If I can set it up, if I can do the setup right.
Yeah, you just figure out the right wording to it.
Yeah. So you don't have to have been there.
No. It's like first beer of the night. And then I think the
first beer of the night joke was like, well, not my first beer, just of the night.
I would write half a joke. I would write half of it because it happened at the party,
yeah.
And then I never had a way to get out of it, so I'd start spiraling and just
more end more it with ridiculous.
Like a, yeah, and just make it ridiculous, yeah. and then just start.
You were
parking.
Going to ridiculous a lot.
Every one of my jokes end with me stabbing someone,
yeah.
or killing someone because I didn't know how to end a joke. I didn't have like a good end.
So let's just go.
Let's just take it to the furthest way.
Yeah,
and then I was like, great.
next
joke. But yeah, all my jokes were written at the time around friends at a party.
Dude, I'm so glad that this was early on in your development, because I was listening to it on the plane and just going, this is like, this is not a good comedian who's doing an act right
horrible,
now.
Horrible. And that's why I'd rather do that than like my hour special, because my hour special, I'm like, if people don't like it, I get offensive,
right.
or defensive.
Yeah.
But in this one, I'm like, oh yeah, I did this 5 years in.
Wow.
I had a child coming on the way. I had one that was like turning 3.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need fucking money.
I was listening to this. I was like, this is an example of like, you should do an album when you should do it instead of when you feel like doing it. When you just want to get rid of this material or something. I don't know. It's just like,
burn it. Or you know what it was? It was a lot of good material premises that I hadn't worked out.
Yeah.
Like carrot cucumbers in this at one point.
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't think it's thought out.
Okay. Well, that's advice to a young man.
Okay. Well, let's go to the next one. What's the next one?
Advice
after
a young man.
Well, no. Oh, that's the very next one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so then the next one's advice to a young man.
Yeah.
Women! Is that your sister? Girlfriend? Okay, how old are you? Like, 18. What are you drinking? Is that? Daphne. Virgin?
Yeah. Okay.
Did you do the whole, can I get a strawberry daiquiri? And they're like, ID? And you're like, virgin. Let me tell you something. I'm gonna make life easy for you. 18, you know how nice it would be to have like a Dr. Phil for 18-year-old boys just to help you through life. This is what you need to know, okay? Women never want to know who you are. They always want to be guessing. You got to be mysterious, coming from anywhere. Oh, surprise her. Show up in the middle of the afternoon with flowers. Hey. She'll be like, oh my God, who are you? Pull out a handgun in a bridal shower. I'm talking now, bitches. When you get that opportunity to really consummate the relationship, you know what I'm talking about? And she's all,
how?
Spit in her mouth. Don't let her know who you are. Keep her on her toes. I do it. That's what keeps a marriage fresh. Where are my married people? Married? Married? Yeah. If you keep them guessing... That's what keeps you, and laughing. You got, like, the other day we're in the grocery store, right? And we're in the produce section. And I yell out to my wife, honey, this time get a thin cucumber. In a couple, you get it. You know it's a joke. You're like, oh my God, what is this asshole doing? And some of the guys, that's good. And then there's always one girl going, oh my God. And I just stared her down and I go, you know what? Get your mind out of the gutter, okay? I'm putting it in her ass, not mine. Which is life lesson number two. If you're gonna put a vegetable in her ass, don't use a cucumber, use a carrot. A cucumber's like a home invasion. I'm coming in, bitches! A carrot's more like, hello. Because you guys don't smoke, but you guys, there are like 12 really great laughers in this room. the hardest laugh I've had in a while. The other day I'm at the gym and I'm jogging on the treadmill, and the girl in front of me is jogging, and I'm kind of looking at her ass a little bit because she's in good shape, but she's doing this like, jog, jog, legs apart, push-ups, and push-ups, and then back and jog, and back and jog, and push-ups, and push-ups, and turn around, and push-up, and I'm watching her going, oh, please fall, oh, please fall. Soaking wet, sweating, all of a sudden she goes to do one of these, toe catches, hits and lands on her back, and the best part was that because she's sweating and that little tread's plastic, she hit like she fell off a pair of water skis, like, and before her body caught and went shooting that way, I could not stop laughing. And the only reason I was pointing was that I wanted everyone to know what I was laughing at. I love it, blacks. That's the best laughs. That's rule number two, carrot. Keep that right. You need to write this down. Okay.
And so this one, okay, you put all this stuff in about cucumbers. Okay, it's so dirty that I'm like, you've never fucked this way.
Yeah.
You're taking like for granted. I see Red Band doing this sometimes. You're taking for granted that like obviously vegetables are for fucking sticking up someone's ass.
Well, it's a true story. That's the crazy part.
What? Leanne?
Hold on. No. The premise is a true story.
Yeah.
And this is, once again, this is where how I wrote then. Was that
made a joke about it at a supermarket with Leanne.
I made a joke at a supermarket
to embarrass your wife.
It was when Georgia was 13 months old.
Okay.
I'd only remember that because I remember Georgia was crying really bad and Liam was pushing her in a stroller. And I was fucking around a lot that day, but I got embarrassed when Georgia started crying. And so I kind of was like, fuck, this is so bad. And what I did was I was like, oh, wait, this doesn't need to be my kid. So I backed away from them and I was like, now I'm just someone in the supermarket and she's the one with the lunatic kid. And so I was like, oh. And then as a joke, I walk by and I go, hey, keep your kid quiet to Leanne. And Leanne was like, what? And I was like, ugh, and walked away. And then I started giggling, and I thought that was funny. I was like, well, I'll try that on stage. And then I got in fun mode, and then we're in the produce section, and I yell out real loud. I go, hey, Leanne, this time get a thin cucumber. And Leanne laughs, and a lady said something to me, and I didn't say anything. That's
what did the lady say to you?
That was inappropriate, and that word inappropriate fucking has always rung bad with me.
Yeah. Because you're deciding what's inappropriate.
Yeah. And I didn't.
Same problem with this Donald Sterling stuff.
Dude.
It's not your line.
Yeah.
It's not illegal. It's not your line to make.
It's, I guarantee you, Jerry Jones is not talking to anyone on the phone.
Anybody.
Right now.
Oh, there's a ton of those old guys. They talk the same way.
Yeah, yeah. We talk in person, naked in a steam room. But so that was the premise. And then I was like, oh, that's a good joke. And I said a comeback to the lady, but it didn't work.
On stage?
No, in real life.
Oh.
And then I wrote the joke.
As like your comeback to the lady.
Putting it in her ass, not in mine.
Right.
We're Christians. And then the joke was, and then I realized what I was saying on stage within and this, by the way, this is when this joke is maybe, I'm going to say a year old.
Okay.
So I wrote it, but I didn't workshop it much because it was I was only doing 20 minutes at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then I did this, put this joke in there, and I was like, oh, if you're ever going to do that with a vegetable, don't use a cucumber, use a carrot. And that got the big laugh, and that was the fucking... But yeah, I've never fucking fucked Leanne with a carrot.
God, it was Jesus, man.
But
you got to show bravado.
Comedy at that time was not what it is today.
No.
Comedy at that time was fun boy comedy.
Dude, I remember Gabriel and Felipe when they had the show at the Brave Bull out in Alhambra or something. They had these Mexican rooms that would pay you $75. So you actually get by a little bit as a comic.
Yeah.
Mexican was the only ones in LA who really got by as comics.
Yeah.
But they were like, man, you got him and Johnny Montana or one of the old mentors was like, you got to go after him, man. You got to go after them, show them you're tough.
Well, because
you're some Jew in a Mexican room.
Yeah, and comedy at that time was Dane. It was Dane. Dane was the monster at the time, and
he hadn't blown up,
but we knew he was because he'd go up and he'd be like
at Dublin's, he would crush,
and it was all fucking confidence, fucking energy, and it was like owning the room. There was no vulnerability on stage
none.
At the time.
No,
and so
none.
All my jokes were like, fucking put it in her butt, stick it in her ass, oh, put my dick in her mouth while she's sleeping, all stuff I wouldn't do, which now when I say on stage sounds odd when it comes out of my mouth.
Cause I'm like, so not you.
Yeah, it's not me, but at the time, you got to remember.
Plus, you're so much more genuine now that this was like, whoa, you're being this character, trying to be this guy.
And I also thought that if I could get recognized as the fucking crazy, wild party animal, sex guy, lunatic, that everyone automatically would be like, headliner. Fucking, right. This makes sense. You got to remember, I also had deals at the time that were, I'd gone through two deals, and all the deals were like, he's the fucking hurricane that walks into the room and is like, and everyone's like.
So you're trying to fulfill that?
Oh, yeah, because I wanted another development deal. Right. I was broke. When I say broke, I remember one time during this period of my life, I went, there was a gambling night and Tosh was coming to pick me up and we were going to go gamble at a big gambling party and I needed $100.
You needed to make $100 in gambling?
Nope. I needed $100 from Leanne. I said, can I get $100?
Oh. She goes,
we don't have it. I said, babe, just give me the $100. She goes, we don't have it. I said, no, I know we don't have it, but I'm going to win tonight. Just give me the $100. She goes, no, honey. I don't have $100 in our bank account to give you so that you can have $100. Huh. And I was like, what are you talking about? She was like, we don't have $100. And I remember being like, holy shit.
That's not very much to not have.
Ugh, dude. At that time, it's like you get good on stage. You can do good on stage.
Yeah.
You don't know who the fuck you are.
Right. But you're proficient enough. That's when comics start getting like... angry because they deserve it now. Like, I'm getting laughs.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm killing as hard as anyone out there. I'm killing harder. And
I see all these 15-year comics, they come in here, they don't kill like I kill.
Yeah. That's exactly how I thought.
Yeah. My joke that they made me do was telling girls in those Mexican rooms, like, I'll do you doggy style and do your taxes on your back. I'll fuck your doggy style and do your taxes. Yeah.
Maybe top five people I don't want doing my taxes is you.
Oh, yeah, good point. I'll do them really badly.
All right, what's the next bit?
12 words.
Ready? If you get in a fight with her, no matter what it is, who started it, I don't care. And sometimes, guys, we get in those fights that we get lost. Like,
You're all of a sudden you're on the couch, she's crying, and you're thinking to yourself, wait, I was just making a sandwich in the kitchen. Where's my sandwich? How did I get on the couch? Did I, what the, where am I not? And then she looks at you and goes, do you know what I mean? This is what you say, okay? Every time, no matter what, 12 words. I learned this on Dr. Phil. You are right. I am wrong. I love you. Honey, you win. And then you, am I right, women? And then you take her in your arms and you bring her into the bed and you cuddle like a team. Like a unified, like a fucking coalition. You cuddle and you go to sleep together, happy. And that night while she's sleeping, cut her hair. So you know you fucking won. You're not the king of me. You think you're the king? You're not the king of me. I'm the king of me. In the middle of the night, whisper in her ear, you're on fire. She'll go, ah! And then you pretend like you're dreaming. You're on fire. I had a dream. You're on fire. I'm so worried. She's like, I pissed the bed, asshole. Not cool. Not cool. We're having too much fun. We gotta slow down. This is like sex. We don't want me to finish early and then you guys be staring at me.
By the way, this joke got stolen a lot by a lot of people.
Really?
This joke, a lot of this special was people saying, these are good premises,
yeah,
and I could fucking do this better. And that was the theme back then, was that, hang on one second, I'm going to turn the fan on.
Oh, yeah. Good idea. You have a fan. That's nice. Oh, yeah.
So a lot of these bits were bits that people saw me do.
And they go, well, he's got nothing there. But that makes...
Yeah, I know what he's trying to do, but he can't figure it out. And I'll just take it and do it.
Wow.
And I'd go to clubs 2 years later, and I'd do the bit. And they'd be like... And they'd be like... they'd be like, oh, you know, someone just did that bit. Someone just did that bit. Here, who did it? And I found out who all those people were. And I've learned the hard way that you do not call people out. You just fucking sit silent and hate them silently.
Yeah.
But like... I remember there were a lot of
learned the hard way.
But like the other bit I had at the time was this Dora the Explorer joke about Dora every time gathers a group of Mexicans, take them across a river to the other side. They've got to climb a fence, go over a river where they meet up with the family and get jobs. And then I go, who stops them at the river every time? The grumpy old troll who lives under the bridge. Sounds a lot like it's the Border Patrol. And that joke got fucking... I mean, I come into a club and they'd be like, oh, someone just did that. But right. This joke was the first joke officially... That got this joke and another joke that I took out of here because so many people were telling it by the time I started telling it.
Yeah.
It was later on, it's what the cops touching the cops' faces.
Yeah.
There was a tag to that of I wish I was a magician. I stopped writing jokes like this entirely because not only was it not me, but they were so stealable.
So stealable. And then some people like just write those things on their own.
Yeah.
Because they're so like at a club when girls dancing in a circle, they can't get in. So yeah. 80 comics do that.
Yeah.
But it's not. None of them took it from any of them. It's just like it's such the obvious thing at a club.
Yeah. It's the joke was, I wish I was a magician so that when a cop pulled me over and he's like, do you have weed in this car? I could slap my pocket and say, there's no marijuana in this car.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, the marijuana is behind your ear. How did it get back there? And it was like, as soon as I told it, I saw it again like the next night. Oh. And I was so this joke, the 12 things say to your wife, is a true thought I had, true joke I wrote,
yeah,
gone. Second I fucking told it, someone liked it,
and then
when they went on the road, they just told it.
There was this guy, Harris Pete, who saw this guy, David Teitelbaum, I think, and he said some joke about gambling. He saw a guy in a wheelchair at a table, and he was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm playing blackjack because I feel lucky. And he goes, isn't it clear that you don't have any luck? And then Harris was like, that's good, I'm going to do that in Vegas. And he's like, no, don't. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because it's mine. This is really, though, it's just number three in advice. You do two things of advice.
What's the other one?
Well, you say words of advice or you're a young man is your last bit. And this 12 words starts. Here's the third thing I'm going to tell you.
I only do two?
Two in the words of advice. And then this track, 12 words, starts with, here's the third piece of advice you need as a young man. It's just an extension of the last bit. I want to know why you chopped up right there.
I have no fucking idea because I didn't know how to edit.
Right. Okay.
It must be. And then I throw in this joke that I'd seen a girl slip at Crunch on the treadmill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I just threw that in because it had happened and I'm stretching for time.
There's so much here, just chaff, that it's like, get to the bit part already.
There's no bits. There's literally no, like, setup punch.
It's like a minute before you got to just get to it.
No, that wasn't my style back then when I didn't have any material.
Everything's off crowd work. Hey, you ever do this? Hey, man, yeah. You ever see this? And like, cool. Now you have. Now I can say this bit.
Yeah.
It reminded me so much of myself when I was at 5 or 6 years in.
Really?
Listening to this was making me a little angry because I'm like, oh, I was kind of just like this.
Yeah.
The over-sexual toughness, the over-understanding of race and differences.
The way over-understanding of race.
We're just white people.
Yes.
We didn't grow up in the hood. But I think this is what it is. I think I've seen a lot of this now since then. I think it's you're just now, as you're a man, as you're on your own, discovering other races. And discovering, you're finding friends who are from other races. And so then you're learning about them. And you are like, you guys, you almost want to be like, I want to tell you this thing I learned.
Yeah.
Like Mexican families do, but it's like, they all know that already.
Yep.
They've all been exposed to the world.
Yep.
So it's like, you know when you go to a town, you say some joke about the town, and then later you realize every comic when they come to this town says that same joke about it. Because they're just getting exposed to it. Like I'm New York, when I moved to New York, I made all these subway jokes, and then I realized, oh, these are the hacky jokes.
Yeah.
Everyone's done them.
My subway joke's coming up on this album.
Really?
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
It's the truth, though. It's like, you're right. At 5 years in, you should not be making an album. You should not be doing an hour.
You're still learning.
You shouldn't be doing 30 minutes. You should be working in the clubs, hiding out.
Yeah.
You should have your come out party at like 10 years out and do a CD.
Because when you want to analyze an artist's work, let's say it's a painter. Let's say it's Picasso or Van Gogh.
Yeah.
You start to see what periods of development they're in, where they get into depression and where they... But they'd only start showing you their works once they've learned how to paint.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's where you start learning their works. But comedians, like, this is going to take you 7, 8, 10 years.
I'm 15 years in right now, and yeah. I just recently started going, oh, okay, now I know what people like about what I do.
Right.
And now I know what I like about what I do. And now I realize I haven't written a whole bunch in the past 5 years. Like, I haven't written enough. I've written a lot of stories. Uh-huh. I haven't written a lot of jokes or theories or premises about life. Like, right. Like I'm just telling you stories about my life, and I haven't written, like, the chunk of, like...
Your feeling on it.
Of how I'm feeling about any of it. I'm just telling you what happened. So, like, I'm like, I don't want to just be, like... I'm definitely not shitting on my Perbiglia, but I don't want to just be, like...
Tell shits on that kind of material all the time. He's like, oh, you kids with your stories.
Yeah, I want to write... Like, when I watch Chattel... I want to write great premises, like when he goes, you're just shouting the N-word at an eclipse. Like, that to me is one of the funniest things. Do you remember that? He was like, whiskey. Now women are... I'm doing an Italian bit by everyone right now. Whiskey. Now the women are drinking whiskey, but they're cutting it with Diet Coke. Really, ladies? You're drinking whiskey. Are you afraid you're going to look flabby, getting a train run on you on the pool table? Are you afraid? It's whiskey. Are you afraid you're going to look out of shape as you stand outside and yell the N-word at an eclipse? And that wording kicked me so hard in the dick because I was like, I don't have anything that smart in my act.
Because they're going to get so drunk, they just start yelling it.
The N-word at an eclipse. Like, they just see an eclipse. They're like, oh, look at that. Like,
was that from Skanks of the Memories?
No, it's from his new one. His new one's fucking amazing.
I downloaded it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's so fucking good.
I saw Todd Barry, and I asked him about his crowd work special. And I was like, did you take from different parts and sex and stuff and sets and stuff like that? And then he answered me, but he goes, and you'll know when you download it. And I was like, all right. And I just immediately imagined in my head, he meant you should just illegally download it. But it just meant there's no CD stores anymore. That means like that's the way you buy it.
Yeah.
But I just assumed he thought, yeah, go ahead and steal it. Listen to it.
Steal it. Listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look at, you know, it's like, it's arrogant to look back at this and think at 5 years in, I thought I had it nailed.
Yeah. It's so pompous almost. You almost want to be like, hey, kid. You're going to look back on this. You're going to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
You're going to think you're so great.
And then it really puts in perspective how good Eddie Murphy was.
Oh, yeah. That early on.
Yeah. I mean, you look at like I'm almost excited to be fucking 50 doing comedy.
Wow.
You know, like 45 doing comedy. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I think I really know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about is still relating to a comedy club going audience. You don't want to be the comic for 50-year-old people.
Nah, I don't know. I don't know. Louis's got to be 50, right?
People still can relate to him. He still manages to be relatable.
Because he talks
about Burr's up in his mid-40s and stuff.
Yeah, they're all real relatable. Maron.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's not just about, like, I'm getting old now. I see that some old comics do that. Like, I have back pains where I didn't used to.
I look at some of the guys
who
stand up today that are much younger than me.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, not really. And by the way, this is when I was also, right after this, I kind of formed my view on comedy. Like, what I was doing in this is, like, party fun boy comedy.
Yeah.
Party fun boy comedy where everything's funny. This is what funny frat boys do. There's no real drama. I'm coming from a place of superiority. This is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. I'm fucking 29 years old, 30 years old. What do I know about what you got to do?
Yeah.
I'm talking to grown-ups in the audience who have fucking...
Because you want to feel like you know.
Yeah.
You want it. Yeah.
It's really... It is...
Yeah, there's grown-ups in the audience and you're acting like you're tough and you know what the deal is.
Yeah. And I'm like, and I'm telling them, I'm probably one of the younger people in that room. There were no college kids in that room at all. Not at all.
Right.
And I think this is probably right after Katrina.
Yeah.
So like, there's a lot of displaced families that are coming in for free tickets to cheer themselves up. Like, this is like, I mean, I don't know if that's for certain, but I'm sure it is.
Let's talk about Mexicans. Okay. I love the fact that we're all different colors. I celebrate it, and I don't want you to misconstrue it, because I am honest. I'm very honest. I don't like the whole thing, the PC thing, where like black people, Mexicans, and everything else. Oh my God! Sorry, I'll get back to that. Did you guys know, and this isn't about you guys, but you guys are... Oh, wow. I was like, ladies and gentlemen, David Koresh. That was like a little like 1960s head. Are we going to go to the house tonight? I joke around about race. I'll talk about that thing in a second. Let's finish my point. Because it's fun. Like, this is an interesting thing right now. Like, is there any black people in here tonight?
No!
Did you already do a fucking head count? Man, this is going to be a good show. I hope he talks about them. Like, okay, me and my buddy Dimitri. Dimitri is white, and I'm white. Oh, I'm white also. One day we're in New York, and we step onto a subway. And the second we step onto the subway, two white guys, we step on and we realize that everyone on the subway is black. Listen to how white crowds get silent. Because we know in your head, we're not comfortable being the minority at all. At fucking all. Like, if this room was all black right now and you two walked in, you'd go, oh, wow, are you guys having a meeting? It's just unnerving. But you'd walk in regardless. They could be carving up a dead white guy on stage, and you'd still walk in because you don't want to look racist. God forbid you go, you know what, I'm going to wait for the next one. You guys go to Uptown, I guess is where you're going, but I'm not. So we get on the train, we step on the train, and do that, like, sit down and do that nervous white guy stare that okay. You ever been like sitting at a stoplight at like 2 in the morning and you're just sitting there just waiting to get home and all of a sudden your windows start vibrating? And a car pulls up next to you and you don't fucking look, you just go like this? It's not racist to look, but you don't just go, hey, because you're afraid they'll go, I'm gonna fucking kill you, bitch! Hey, do Mexicans do that or you just look probably? You do? If everyone does it too, I guess. Holy shit. So we do that nervous white guy stare. We're sitting there just a little bit like, And black guys, when that situation occurs, they're a little bit louder. Like, you know, like, I stabbed that motherfucker for no reason at all. And you're like, what the fuck did you just say? But the best part of the story, the reason I tell this, is that my stop is before Dimitri's stop. So I'm going to leave him to the only white guy on the train. So my stop comes up, I'm like, oh, see you later, bro. And I get off, and I look back at him, and I'm standing on the subway cart, and he's like, bye. And before the train took off, I stuck my head back in the subway. I go, Dimitri, I'll see you at the rally on Thursday. White power, my brother. That's how I celebrate diversity.
All right, what's next? Probably.
Who's Dimitri?
Dimitri Martin.
That's who it was?
Yeah.
Did you roll with him a lot?
Yeah. He was an interesting guy because we started on the same night and then...
Started on the same night?
Yeah.
Comedy?
Yeah, technically. So we both did an open mic on the same night and then he exploded. Like, he did one open mic and then was like the hottest fucking guy in New York. And, I mean, I remember...
BJ Novak in L.A.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember Janine Garofalo was like... We'd been doing stand-up 2 weeks and he was in a real... honest conversation with Janine Garofalo about comedy. And I was like, how the fuck did he do that? And then I was like, in my head,
joke
I was
writing.
Like, why didn't he introduce me to her?
Yeah, it's all
and
about
he,
you.
And he was like, because I was like, I'm his friend. We're hanging out. He'd only known me 2 weeks. I'm sure he's like, why would I introduce you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm barely getting by myself.
Janine Garofalo is talking to me. What are you talking about? Why should I take time out?
It is my friend Bert. And then I would have been like, hey, I'm a big fan.
And then she'll walk off.
Yeah. But he was like hot instantaneously, and so I stopped doing comedy right after that for like 7 months because I couldn't get on stage. And Dimitri had a spot everywhere.
What's that stuff that turns the toilet blue?
Tidy bowl?
No, that's his joke. But instead of tidy bowl, he says like blue, like ice cream or something, or like blue ices.
I don't know.
Then he would shit it out blue, and that would turn the toilet bowl blue. All misdirections.
Yeah. I mean, he just, he's very mathematical. So, like, I remember hanging out with him and he would explain comedy to me and he'd explain why comedy worked.
In beats and stuff?
In mathematical, like, equations.
Wow.
Like, he'd be like, he knew all the different styles of comedy there were. And he's like, there's seven styles. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But he's like, there's seven styles of comedy. Like, and he'd point out, look at, like, Norton, look at Attell, look at, Hedberg, look at Stephen Wright, look at Judy. Who's the girl that
Gold?
No, who's the
Cianciato?
One?
No,
no, who's
Janutta?
Judy's wrong name. Who's the girl that does Wendy Liebman?
Oh yeah,
he'd like look at Wendy Liebman. Look at and he'd point out the different styles of comedy.
Yeah,
and he had figured out his style very quickly, and he was like, "This is my style." And I was like, holy shit.
So weird to make that decision when you're just starting comedy and have to stick to it forever based on a decision you made when you were a shitty comic.
I thought my style would find me.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I'm going to fucking find a few styles that are not me, but I'll always have my voice, but I will never have like, I'm never going to be able to write until I know what the fuck I'm writing about.
Yeah.
But he's still doing the same thing.
He is.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, he is. He hasn't really changed much at all, coming to his own the way like McConaughey has.
Yeah, that joke got me my first development deal.
The yelling white power to a guy's subway doors are closing when it's
full.
Yeah,
it was true.
Wow.
Dimitri was on the train, and Dimitri was from Yale, so he had no experience with like
blacks.
Black people at all technically, and so like when they got on the train, he was like, "What? What are you worried about, Bert?" But I was from the South, where it was Tallahassee was extremely segregated.
I'll tell you what I'm worried about.
And I was like, we're going to Harlem right now. And I was like, I'm from Tallahassee. I'm from a very small town in the South. I'm like, we're going to Harlem. I've only heard horror stories about this place. I'm getting off the next stop. And so I yelled it to him. But this is before cell phones, so I had to call him when he got home. I had to wait till he got home to make sure he got okay.
I remember that. Everybody okay, call when you get home. And it's like, what if you don't call, then you're just going to know they're not okay? What is that going to do?
Wait, I don't know if that's the next joke, by the way.
What?
The Dimitri one?
That was Blacks on a Subway.
Oh, yeah, is it? Oh, by the way, you can tell the way I name these.
Yeah, why?
So that people would want to click on it.
Click on it?
Yeah, like I named everything like kind of like Blacks on a Subway. So people would be like, ooh, what's this?
Really?
Yeah. It's fucking shallow,
like
I thought about
this is what's gonna get people into
like
it.
What would be the buzz? What would catch your eye when you're scrolling through? So like advice for the drunks is like sounded like something like young and like mm-hmm. edgy.
Like Stanhope would say.
Yeah. So
accidental racism is the next one.
You ever do you ever do like an accidental racist thing to someone? Like you don't mean it, you have no ill intentions, but it comes off like the other day I'm in my kitchen and I'm cooking. And my maintenance man comes to the door. His name's Mario, Mexican guy. And he opens the door. I go, hey, Mario. And at the time, I happen to be cooking fajitas. So I look at him and I go, hey, I'm cooking fajitas. And I realized as soon as it came out of my mouth, what am I expecting him to reply with? Like, Arriba! Let me finish that shit, boy. Here, let me. Oh, I'm gonna call my wife. She'll clean your house and pierce your daughter's ears. Give me a Budweiser. I felt awful. He just looked at me like, so what? Don't you know Mexican men don't cook? My wife does that shit. No, I didn't say that. I'm kidding. I don't even know. I'm just kidding.
That's a true story too. That's what the
Who's Mario? What's this based on?
Mario's our maintenance man at the thing.
At the apartment.
And he walked in and I was making fajitas. And he walked into the kitchen and I was like, hey Mario. And I literally just real quick goes, I'm making fajitas. And he looked at me like very flatly, like,
so?
So? And I was like,
why would I care about that?
And I felt and like it but then you see like the nuance of my stand-up at the time was like what I thought was genius was like the line I loved when he was like, oh, cook that shit up, bro. Get me a Budweiser. We'll pierce your daughter's ears. Because I had noticed that Mexican kids were getting their ears pierced very young.
Yeah.
So that was like my one little like alternative comedy jab. This. Yeah, I caught this. Oh.
It was a lot of racial, well, it gets worse.
It doesn't get too much worse, does it?
It just gets all about race.
That was like my
stereotypes
big
stereotypes.
Yeah, but, well, yeah.
I used to brag to Shanja, to Rogan's manager. I was like, no, that's what I care about. That's what I like doing.
I thought I was breaking down walls.
Yeah, me too. Breaking down walls.
I thought I was literally the white guy that was being honest, and you'd respect the fact that I was not fucking cutting corners.
Yeah,
and then you respect the fact that I was being honest and not being hateful. I'm just saying there are differences.
Yeah,
we are different. But we're all the same, and this is what will bring us together. And I got to be dead fucking honest with you, a million more times than not, people came up to me, black people came up to me and loved it.
Right.
And black people, Mexican people, especially older black people. And so, like, I felt like I was going in the right direction. What I realize now is that what else were they going to say?
It was also just so easy and so down the middle.
So easy. So easy to talk about race. It's so easy.
It's not anything real. Like the way Chris Rock was like, you know, the difference between black people and niggers.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, one reads, one doesn't.
I don't think that. Was that the joke?
I don't know. Something along those lines.
I think you just sizzled it down.
Did I sizzle it down too much?
It's like, I listened to Rogan and Will.
Anderson?
Will, black dude with the dreadlocks, but you used to have dreadlocks, shaved them off.
Sil Vance?
No, maybe it's not Will.
Ian Edwards, yeah.
On today, and they were talking about Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah, oh yeah, he was so racist.
but it was so funny. Did you listen to them?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's great because
what'd they say?
Ian's like, he was basically right.
Yeah, they are bred. They were actually bred for athleticism.
but then Joe's like, yeah, I know. He was totally right in what he was saying. Everything he said was accurate. He's like, pull up what he said. But then when you hear what he said, it's so racially insensitive. Just when the way he refers to it is so insensitive. But what has happened now is in life, I believe, is that instead of us writing a bit about Jimmy the Greek, what happens now is you talk about it on a podcast. And that conversation is so genuine and so funny and so accurate and touching that you couldn't recreate that. Or if you decided to, you'd have to find a new way to... Podcasting has changed the dialogue of stand-up.
Yeah, you get more honest. You have to like be more like
so
this.
So much more honest.
Because you can't suddenly use a different voice or different like Emo Phillips type voice.
Yeah, there is no that.
Big J or Metzger, one of them, I forget who said, like if Emo Phillips was working out at clubs today, like at the, you know, in the New York club scene or the LA club scene, like if he was like that 27-year-old, 28-year-old, oh, weird. No. People would laugh him out of the clubs.
Yeah,
well, like, dude, why are you talking that way?
That stand-up doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's because of podcasting. But this is all pre-podcasting stand-up, where it was like, that was the norm. Dude, everyone forgets, Dane ruled the roost. Like, he would walk up.
He was the head of one specific style of comedy.
He'd be like, pickles.
Yeah.
And in your head, I mean, look, think about the guys that we knew. That literally everyone goes, no, no one did. There are a lot of guys doing versions of Dane.
Well, now it's a lot because people were raised on him. So people like...
Dude, there was a lot then.
You could see the influence.
I mean, I look at some guys, I'm not going to say, but I look at some guys and I watch them do stand-up and I'm like, who is that person? Like, who are you? You're not who you are on stage and off stage.
Right.
And that's definitely who I was here. But it's like you look at that and you're like, I don't fucking... Like, I have no connection with you because I don't know who the fuck you are.
Right.
I feel like you don't know who the fuck you are.
Yeah. 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 Asians at the airport.
Oh, this is what I was going to say. Do we have any Asian people here tonight? Don't be fucking scared. Pretend this is math class. Throw your hand up. Where are you? There's got to be a one Vietnamese person in here at least. All right, but this right there. Awesome. What are you?
Taiwanese.
Oh, Taiwanese. I thought you went Tonys. I was like, I think that's a word somewhere. It's an Asian that sings and dances and does plays. Only the gay guys and the women got that. All the guys were like, what the fuck's he talking about? You know this, so don't even say it. Don't answer it. Let the white people and the Mexicans get it. Because, no, you know this, but a lot of us don't know this. Like, I bet you don't. I know you don't know this. I know you don't know this, and I know you don't know this, and I put $100 right here that you guys will pretend to know it, but you don't really know it. Did you know? Tú sabes. Did you know that Japanese people cannot understand Chinese people? At all. Did you know that? You didn't know it! I didn't know it either! I thought it was a little bit like Italian and Spanish, like pantalones, pantaloni, pantaloni. Or like Boston and New York, like, hey, Beckahead, go fuck yourself! They're totally different. You knew this. Wait, what is this? Taiwanese got its own language?
Mandarin.
Is that, who's just said that? Someone went to college, huh?
Mandarin.
That's amazing. Can you speak any of it?
Yeah.
Oh, throw some shit at me. That doesn't even sound like the other ones. That's totally like Korean. Okay, ready? My brain's going, you're jumping from point to point, asshole. And then I said, no, let me finish. I'm at an airport and there's a Korean guy. And theirs is different too. Do you know any Korean? Not even at all. Not even a little bit. He doesn't, and he's probably a smart guy. He didn't know a fucking thing. This Korean guy's going off. Just, it sounds like it, doesn't it, though? Hey, do you ever make it up? Do you ever? I would if I were you, just like in the Galleria. Oh, my God, what the fuck's he yelling about? Michael Jackson! And we're like, what the fuck? So this Korean guy's going off, right? And I'm freaking, that does sound like it though, doesn't it? And I'm backing up like, okay, this guy's yelling. Let me tell you something, people. If you see a person of color screaming in their native tongue, run the other way. Because that means real shit's going down. They don't have time to translate. Like, if I'm in Mexico and I see a guy cutting another guy up with a machete and he's looking at me, I don't run out of the hall and go, ¿dónde está? Oh, fuck. ¿Cómo se dice? How do you guys say the thing? ¿Cómo se dice, cut a head off? I start screaming in English, run! Let's go fucking cut dicks! So I know real shit's going down because he's not translating. His brain's going, no, panic time. Let's go Korea. So I'm backing up like, all right, here we go. I'm about to bail. Like, I notice he doesn't have a mask on, so I'm thinking maybe he's got the bird flu. I don't know. So I'm backing up. Right as I turn to run, I run into this other guy. He wasn't Asian, wasn't Korean, I found out later. He was Japanese. But I couldn't, like, I didn't know that. How am I supposed to know, right? Like, just look, I mean, he wasn't wearing, like, a Rising Sun bandana. I turn around, bump into this this Japanese guy. What the fuck am I looking at? It was Yao Ming. I bump into this Japanese guy, and I look at him, and I go, oh, what's he saying? And he goes, I wouldn't know because I'm not fucking Korean. But I didn't know there were different languages, so I just kept staring at him like, I don't care what you are. What's he saying? Kind of. I'm like, kind of little asshole. I'm like the kind of Korean. And so then I grabbed the Korean guy. I go, what's he saying? I petered off in the middle of that joke because I felt the sweat dripping from my double chin. And I was like, wow, that's got to be disgusting to look at with a bright light on it. I wish I was in better shape, but I don't think it's going to happen. Like, just happen. Unless I get sick and everyone's like, you look good. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm dying. Well, at least you'll go out looking good, huh?
This was inspired by Dr. Ken.
You know what I really liked about this one?
What?
Oh, by the way, that 12 words, I liked cut her hair. But I liked that you said this in like a positive way. Like, you kept it positive with your, like, I didn't know. Like the whole time, like, it's different. Oh, my God. Like, you're just, yeah. It comes from a place of, like.
It was very accurate.
Yeah, like, happy, not understanding. Not like, they don't fucking. I'm not saying that clearly, am I?
No, you are. Is that it's coming from a place of discovery,
yeah,
as opposed to a place of accusation.
Yeah, right. Yes.
I said the true story of this joke was,
yeah,
I was at the Irvine Improv, or the Brea, Ontario Improv,
yeah,
with Dr. Ken. And there was a hallway that they were making people enter in through the hallway.
Yeah.
And there was an older Asian couple yelling at the bouncer in Asian. And they were pointing to Dr. Ken. Like, to where we were, and Dr. Ken wasn't looking. And I said to him, I said, Ken, I think your parents are trying to get into the club. By the way, I wasn't being...
You weren't joking.
I wasn't being funny. And Ken goes, wait, my parents are here? And I went, yeah, is that them? And he goes, no, Bert, they're Japanese. I went, what? He goes, they're Japanese. I said, can you tell? He goes, because I can tell. How can you not? And I was like, it's not like they're wearing a Rising Sun bandana.
Yeah.
And then he said... I said to him, what are they saying? And he goes, I don't know. I go, well, you can't hear any of it? And he goes, no, I can't speak Japanese. I go, wait, Korean people can't understand Japanese people? And he goes, are you being serious right now?
It was funny the way he said it. Was like, it's like, no, but different countries. It's like, great, whatever, but tell me what they're saying.
Yeah, like a little bit. Like,
yeah, can fine, you you're from Arkansas. You still speak English, even though they're from New York.
That bit, and the reason I kept doing it was that because it didn't work the first night I did it.
Yeah.
And Gary Goldman pulled me aside. He goes, I really like that bit.
Really?
He's like, you should. And if you tell me you like a bit of mine, I fucking hold on to it forever.
Yeah, you get one compliment for somebody.
Dude, David Tell, I had a joke that's not in this special, or not in this hour, but it's in my next one about when I spray painted my name right after when I was a kid, I wanted some respect in the neighborhood. So I spray painted my name on the. I tagged the front of our gated community,
yeah,
with a can of spray paint. Just and when I get done, I'm like, motherfucker, I'm the only bird in this neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I was like, ugh, sucks dick underneath it. Uh-huh. And so Attell goes, I like it. And I told it fucking every night for like a year.
Because of that.
Because he said, I like it. I was like, oh, it's going to never leave the act.
Yeah. You got a hero to say something like that.
Yeah.
And then you fuck the joke up. Well, okay.
Wait, hold on. Tell me.
We'll do this at the beginning of the next one. You fuck the joke up at the end.
How?
You just petered off. You went nowhere.
Yep, because I didn't have an end to it.
You just went nowhere, and then it was like, you even said, like, oh, I'm like, what? Go back to it. Like, what are you doing? Dude, I am so glad that this is not like 2 years ago album or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is not a good...
Yeah.
I didn't know what you were going to think about it.
Oh, I listened...
If you were going to think it's awesome.
When I listened to
it... I was worried, yeah.
Can I tell you, when I listen to it, all I listen to is the laughter in the background, and I go, the laughter sounds good.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't laugh once. I listened to the whole thing, I didn't laugh once. I was like, this is tough to sit through.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Mexicans on an elevator.
That's why... Latinos mind their parents so well, people, is because that language comes out with such passion and fire, like Korean and Japanese. That's why they mind their parents. They're like, okay, Dad, I'll fucking do it, okay? Put the samurai sword down, okay? It's done, it's done. Latinos, man, that thing, that language comes off like a... That's why there's so many revolutions in Latin American countries. It's because that language comes out with fire and passion. No, this is not a... En la cocina? No, en la sala! And they're like, yeah, let's fucking get her. I live in LA, and I go into the mall. As I step into the elevator, I hear a cacophony. It's a big word that I just learned. It's I don't know. I could be wrong. You probably know. Really? Who knows what it means? Taiwanese guy. How about the girl that was like, "That's Mandarin." I know you know it. It means a lot, right? You know what it means? Did I just make this word up? It's a loud noise. Oh, there we go. The good lady in the cult. Thank you very much. I can't look over there. A cacophony of noise. I use a Remy the Long noise. Are you new the whole time? Where the fuck were you? I'm waving my head around like I'm teaching an inner city class. Like, come on, fuckers, get your heads right. Cacophony. A lot of shit, right? I should have just said that. We wouldn't have wasted 5 minutes trying to figure out what that fucking stupid word meant. What it is it's a Mexican woman, and she's got 4 kids, right? She's got... Yeah, because she's only 18. She's... It's a white thing, we do that sometimes. But usually when you guys weren't around, but I did it this time with you guys here. Although it gets much worse, here we go. 2 are in the stroller, like crying, like a... Like freaking out, right? 1 is running around the stroller, singing a song in Spanish. I think it was La Bamba, but I don't know. They all start off like La Bamba, you know, like Para Para Feliz Navidad. And so he's running around, she's trying to buckle these in, and then the 4th, right? Now this is my boy, this is who I connected with. Jose. He's go figure. He's by all the buttons ringing the alarm. Like he's got some shit in his head that's kind of, you know, like there's a ring, 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 Para Para La Bamba. Now, at the time this happened a while ago. This happened 3 years ago. So I didn't have a kid. So I didn't know how hard to hit this kid. I had no frame of reference. Like I didn't, you know, like show it to him and then slow it down. I know now, you know, right, Dad? Never hit him in the face. That's rule number 1. Never in the chest or in the arms, you can put a shirt over it. Or, if it's an important lesson, what do? Punch him in the kidneys. So the next day when they're peeing blood, they go, oh, that's right, I don't jump in the car when Daddy's drinking. It's like a post-it note from Daddy. I didn't know this then. I know it now. All I knew how to do, single people, you know how to do this. I know you guys know how to do this. You do that, those accusatory eyes to the parent whose kids, those just glaring like a... That's all I knew how to do. But I didn't have to do that shit. Poor K, you're wondering? I'll tell you, poor K. This was a Latino woman, and the rules in Latino households are different than in white households. White households, it's not that, like, just that. It's more like a, Michael. Michael. What do did Dr. Callahan say about calling mommy a bitch? This is a Latino. I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. At 30 years old at the time, I'd never. This is. She didn't even see me. That's what really. The first thing. There's like many levels of impressing me on this. She didn't see me. You know, with a white person, it takes like 10 minutes and they're looking at you like then they have to chastise their kids. Sorry, he never does this. Oh, yeah. This woman must have seen a shadow I cast reflecting off of, I don't know, and just like a bullwhip. Jose! Did you touch that bell one more time? Do you know what happened to you? And turns back around and it is silent in the elevator. Silent like someone just got a boner in PE class. Silent. You know how quiet that is. You're like, Coach, Curtis has a hard on. Secondly, what impressed me is she didn't do the white thing. This is what white parents do. I will spank your bottom, mister. I will grab you by the ear and I will walk you out of here. She said, you know what will happen to you? And this motherfucker flipped through a Rolodex of traumatic events in his life. Like, it could be any of, like, 10 things. Like, I don't want any of those things to happen. It's like an openly vague threat of, like, the worst is what he's thinking about. I started laughing because I'd never, because I'm not used to that, you know? Like, white people, and it's because our language is goofy. Fuck you, you're not my real mom. She turns back around, and this kid still is not moving. The kid that was singing, he's not singing anymore. And I don't know if it's because he's waiting to sing Donna. I don't know, you know? Oh, Donna. Richie Valens was fucking awesome. Thank you. He was fucking... That's all I know about Mexican people is just from that movie. Isn't that horrible? That and American Me. Black people, Boys in the Hood, and Belly. And Pootie Tang. She turns back around, silent. I start laughing because I'm not the one that got in trouble, you know? It's kind of like fun to be on the other side. I'm like, oh. And I'm looking at him like, and he's just that. Remember when you get punked out by your parents in public and it felt like someone dumped cold water all over you, just like a. And I'm giggling, and I kind of, maybe I went, took it too far, but I looked at him and I go, stupid. But he's not going to let me punk him out in front of his brothers. Fuck no, this is a Mexican man. 6 years old, he's a fucking Mexican man. He's got that Latin fire in him, that machismo. He looks back at me, I'm 30 years old. He looks back at me and goes, fuck you. This is a 6 year old, knowing full well there is nothing I can do. And I'm thinking, holy shit, like he just now his brother, little Richie, is laughing at me. And I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I tap his mom? I'm kind of scared of the lady, to be honest with you. I don't want to get involved in the middle, but I don't, like, how do I fix this? And he's laughing, what are you going to do? All of a sudden it dawns on me, you're not going to punk my shit out, bitch. I'm a grown man. I look at him and I start leaning in, mad dogging him, you know, like, I don't know. Getting close, let him smell me, you know, let him feel the wrath that is the B-man. The closer I get, I realize he is not moving. He's not scared at all. He knows I have no moves in my pocket. Just take it, sit down and take it, white boy. I get like a foot from his face and I'm thinking in my head, okay, your only move right now is to kiss him on the lips. And as soon as I get close, it dawns on me. And I look at him and I start smiling. He gets a little confused. And then I reached up and I rang the bell. Ring, ring! She turned around. What did I tell you, Jose? He goes, mommy, it wasn't me, it was him. She goes, you lie to me, cocksucker. Pulled out a knife, stabbed him in the heart. True story. Shit got real, you know, what can I say?
That lady, first of all, 2 minutes in before you start the bit. 2 minutes and 10 seconds, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, 2 minutes before you started the bit. And then I want to ask what you're doing with that white guy in the crowd at 2:10.
I have
some
no
white
idea.
Guy where you say something and you're like, oh, I you went back and forth with him. I didn't know what it was.
It's probably from another show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 2 minutes before you even start the joke.
Yeah.
Wow.
It. This was the beginning of what I'm doing now.
Okay.
Okay. This is the very first
telling
step.
A story.
Telling a story.
Yeah. Because it seemed like that's what that was.
So, and it happened in New York, and it happened in a mall. And it's a true story, except for the fact that I stopped her before she hit him.
You stopped her?
I stopped her. I went, ma'am, it's me. It was me.
Oh, you
it
did?
Me.
Oh, you did yeah. the you did the actual ring the bell?
Yeah, I actually rang the bell.
Oh.
So, because she yelled at him. She turned around. She had 3 kids, 2 in a stroller, 1 running around the stroller.
Yeah.
And then 1 was fucking around, and then 1 by the thing was ringing the bell. And when I walked in, it was real quick. It was real quick. Not like I drag it out where I'm like, I look at her, I look at him, I look at her. But it was like real quick, and she turned around. She goes, Jose, shut that bell 1 more time, and I'll fucking kill you or whatever. And then he looked embarrassed.
You don't know what's
And I started
happen.
Giggling, and he looked pissed.
Yeah.
And I looked at her. She's not looking. I reach over and I ring the bell. And the funny part of this for me was the look on
away?
His eyes when he went, no. Like, as I went to reach the bell, and I hit it, and he went, no. And then he looked at her, and she went, what did I tell you? And I go, ma'am, it was me. I was just kidding. She didn't laugh.
Didn't
no one
laugh.
Laughed, and I left.
Uh-huh.
But it was the very beginning of me telling stories about my interactions and not trying to write jokes that I thought were racy, edgy.
Oh, that's interesting. So this is right where it begins, pretty much.
That joke.
Style.
Yeah, that style is the first one I wrote. And then the next day, I was in a bowling alley. This joke is not on here. But I was in a bowling alley, and there was a kid that I went in to go. I was drunk, and I went and I pissed, and I was accidentally pissing at a kid's stall, and a kid came in next to me, and he pissed, and he pissed in the big boy stall, but instead he put his dick on the thing, because he could barely get himself up there, and I tried to stop him. I go, no, but it doesn't matter. You're not allowed to talk to a kid who's peeing, and I scared him, and he screamed, and I was like, oh, fuck, and it was so uncomfortable, and then I started telling stories like that, and I think then I became out with the Disneyland on acid, and it's like I started writing that way, but this was like the first nut that I had that I was like,
oh, wow.
That's interesting. That works in my head.
Yeah. When they when the one thing you said I really liked was when you go, when I was like, she was like, he's talking. So you go, now this is before I had a child. So I didn't know, because they were yelling at him and he was being whatever.
Yeah.
And you just think you're going down this road of like, you don't know how you're supposed to be with kids. But like the misdirect of, I didn't know how hard you can hit a child.
Yeah.
Which means it was just such a double misdirect.
Yeah.
I just liked it a lot.
Oh, I hated that part.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know how hard to hit a child. It just seemed like, not only are you not saying, now I know how to raise a child, it's how hard to hit him, and plus you're hitting someone else's child.
I used to say, or where to hit it. Like, do you know where to hit a child?
Right.
You hit him in the chest or in the shoulder so you can put a shirt over it.
It's that bravado.
Or if it's an important lesson, where do you punch him? And then everyone will go, in the ass. I go, in the kidneys. Because the next day when they're pissing blood, they go, oh, that's right. I don't jump in the car when daddy's drinking.
Right.
But it's like a fake bravado that is so disconnected from me now that I don't even know who that guy is.
Maybe I wrote this down too, that maybe it was because I was on a Chibo Chew when I was listening to this in a plane. But as you were doing this, I just started thinking about Freddie Soto. I started to really miss him in the middle of it.
Why?
I don't know. You're just like, talking about this Latino family or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
My mind wandered. I just started thinking about Freddie.
Really?
And so I'm like, oh, fuck. Freddie's not around.
That's interesting.
Maybe because he did that. He painted a picture of a Latino family in such a real way, maybe.
Yeah.
That it made me think of his stuff. I'm not really sure.
The thing that was separating us, or let me say, the thing that was separating me from good comics at the time,
because
I wasn't writing from a place of truth.
Right.
I was writing from a place of what I thought was funny.
The crowd will laugh at this.
I always think it's what the downfall of guys who sit at a coffee shop and just write all day, it's where they're never going to go to the next place.
It's those roast joke writers.
Yeah.
We're like, all right, man, yeah, I think this will work because of whatever, but you don't care about it either way.
Yeah, you have no connection to it. Now when I tell a story like I have a story about Isla that is very true. Like so true,
yeah.
so true, Hey, Leanne, are the girls over there?
She's gone.
If the girls come back, I'll do it for you. Yeah. And it's so real. It tastes real.
Really?
And I love writing like that now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. It's,
when people are like, I know that place. I've been like, there.
When you go, when, or better yet, when I go, it's like the reason, the thing I have a problem with now with like the machine story or flying dildos. Flying dildos is a story I'm trying to get off the ground, and it's not working.
Yeah.
And it's not working because I'm too married to the truth, because I know that the funny is in the truth and not in the make-believe. Because the make-believe will end up becoming bravado or some false thing. It's like the machine story. I don't sit there and go, I robbed these motherfuckers. That's what you get, bitches.
Oh, right.
Like, it's me going, I was scared as fuck. You know, like, hey, Leanne, are the girls floating around? That's not going to happen.
I like to say, though, it's like things have to be changed so you can explain, like, the feelings better. Like, let's say you come from, this is my example I always use, if you come from a really conservative family, like, really conservative, like, upscale, Harvard elite, you know, one of those people that, you know. If you're one of those Great Gatsby balls and your father comes in and farts, that's super embarrassing for that.
Yeah.
The crowd's not going to understand how a fart could be that bad.
Right.
So in order to make them feel how mortified you were in front of your friends, you have to change it out to shit his pants. You have to change it to something worse so that they can understand what you're feeling. You know,
yeah.
Or you got a shitty gift on Hanukkah or Christmas. You have to make it like shittier than they think because, you know.
I also think that it's...
Or explain it. Somehow explain it better.
Yeah, I also think it's at a there are people who are meant to speak about life at a certain age, and that you just aren't at that age. Like, I'm not saying that Dane has reached his, like, peaked or anything, but like, Dane was definitely meant to talk about life when he was fucking 27, 28, 29, 31, 32, 33.
It's almost like now it's like, dude, you got to grow up. Otherwise, it's like weird looking at people with like shorts and a t-shirt on.
It's like there needs to be a growth. I was talking to someone about it the other day, and they're like, you know, it's interesting that like David Letterman technically hasn't grown much artistically. Like, he's still the exact same guy with the weird looks.
Yeah,
but he hit his peak and stayed there
for so long. He hit his peak almost before he got the show he's on now at CBS.
It's like Jimmy Fallon. It would be an interesting guy to watch.
How's he going to grow up? Exactly.
Because right now he's still the boy.
Now.
He's the frat boy who's got the TV show, and it's all giggles and fun.
You should see Kindler's impression of him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Impression of him interviewing Stalin. That's great. And then you killed Hitler. Ah, cool. That's great. You're doing a lot of great stuff. Wow. Crazy.
I'll tell you what I like what Fallon does.
What?
Is when he does like the little bullshit games that you'd never know do. Like when they do like...
Games with celebrities.
Yeah, when he does games like that. Like, I love the freedom he has on that show.
Yeah.
I don't know if I need to see him interview anyone ever, technically.
Plays a song like in a green room with like weirdo instruments with like paper and shit instead of... Yeah.
It's like, I like the freedom he has in that show, but his interviews are like a little like...
Light.
A little giggly and like... And I'm sure that's how I'd interview.
Yeah, probably.
But
me too. Hey, I go to the bathroom.
Go hit pause.
Hit pause and keep.
Yeah.
What shall we finish off? Let's finish off this bit.
What was this bit?
The Mexicans in the elevator. How do you feel when you're listening? So you listen to this. How do you feel when you are listing off black movies for punchlines? You're literally going, Pootie Tang and this bit and this.
Well, by the way, Pootie Tang. We got to remember, this is before Pootie Tang was what we know Pootie Tang to be.
Right.
Like, I knew Pootie Tang sucks. I fucking saw it. And I just worked with Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And like, so like, it was edgy at the time. Like, American Me, Pootie Tang, Boys in the, not any, I don't even think just, I said Boys in the Hood. I used the
straight comparison. Like, here's some Mexican movies. Now here's some black movies.
Yeah. Everything What was the joke I said? I said, I think everything I know about, because the joke is the kid was singing La Bamba.
Yeah.
And I said, is that bad that everything I know about Mexican culture I learned from the movie La Bamba?
La Bamba.
You got one bad brother and a good brother. And like, and I said, everything I learned from or American Me, and I go, or for black people, Pootie Tang. That was the joke, was that it had nothing to do with black people. It just had black people in it.
Oh.
Like, it wasn't a movie about...
The black experience.
The black experience. It just had black people in it.
What was that? All gibberish, that movie? Pootie Tang?
I have no idea. I couldn't sit through it.
I got to watch that and give it a chance now and say, what the fuck were you doing? All right, let me pee.
All right, go pee.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
I feel like we're critiquing my own album, and I'm not a fan of it either.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, like it's... But we... It's a reason that you said you want to do Comfortably Dumb, or do you want to do the first one?
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I was like... I don't want to do Comfortably Dumb because I may be emotionally attached to it. So I may get defensive.
Yeah.
This one I have no fucking attachment to.
It's cool. I mean, you see clearly it's someone who's doing it too early.
And you know what? And I do think that the people that listen to this right now are a lot of comedy fans and a lot of comics too. And I think comics should know that this is what happens when you do stand-up at fucking 5 years. When you're headlining at 5 years in...
People are making notes of you.
Yeah.
Going, this guy sucks. And they're going to see you 10 years later go, no, I saw him and he sucked.
I remember thinking why Bobby Kelly didn't think I was a murderer on stage. And this is why. He was watching me.
Yeah.
He was like, I see what he's trying to do, but he can't do it yet. But he's still headlining. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, look, you wonder why you don't get respect from comics? You get respect when you deserve respect.
Yeah. You can't demand it. All these people are like, why don't these guys? Well, maybe it's because you're not as good as you think you are. If all these guys aren't giving you the dues, maybe it's because they're right.
Can I tell you what really redefined my fucking style of comedy?
What?
Was going on the road as a headliner for the Improvs and Funny Bones for the first time.
Why?
Because you followed fucking murderers.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, whoa, I really don't have much of an act.
Right.
Like, my whole act depends on hopefully some funny shit will happen in the room, and I'll play off that for fucking 10 minutes.
Right.
And then work that into a bit.
And plus, if you're a feature, you're going after the MC, which is sometimes really poor comedians.
Oh, dude. Features at the Improvs.
It's easy.
And at the Funny Bones,
we're
destroying back then.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, this is just way different than when I did Thrilled with Segura, which was his first album. But that was a killer.
Well,
he'd
been doing stand-up like 12 years.
They came to him and was like, hey, it's time. We need you to do a CD.
Yeah. I remember Flip Schultz had told me, he goes, at this time, he'd been doing it as long as I had. And he was like, I have 8 CDs.
Oh, what?
And I was like,
8
Whoa.
CDs.
And, but remember, everyone had 8 CDs. So now the technology caught up. And so everyone knew how to make a CD. So everyone had a CD.
Doesn't mean you should.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Make a t-shirt. If you want to sell something, make something else.
Yeah.
Don't put yourself on the record for all time. It's like...
You know what's so funny is I looked at this. I had to download it from iTunes.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's gotten no reviews.
Really?
It's interesting.
No one goes back in there and
reviews,
like,
yeah.
Feels the need to be like, hey, man, this was amazing.
It was, yeah, no one ever listened to it and went, I need to bring this back.
By the way, don't forget to get Bert's album, Life of the Party, at Amazon, right, almost right now, tomorrow,
yeah.
May 27th. Whenever you listen to this.
Look, I would say now I'm an accomplished comedian.
Yeah.
I'm touring the world. I can know what I'm doing on stage.
Yeah.
I still get fucked up. I'm still a little bit of a mess. But, so please get my book, Life of the Party.
On Amazon, where else can I get it?
And by the way, please respect the vulnerability that goes into comics. Is that there's a certain type of person that would allow you to sit and talk about his first piece of art.
Yeah.
And that's a comic. You think any fucking filmmaker's like, let's sit and pick apart.
Tell you why I wasn't good enough to do this.
Let's take a look at my first shorts.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Married and Sex is the next bit.
That's nice when you start pitting. Married with a daughter, had a baby girl. I still have her, but I'm married 3 years now. My wife said to me the other day, she goes, because sex is, I'm not saying it's boring when you get married. Okay, there you go. I get apparently I didn't have to. Because I'm fast during sex. I'm not afraid to admit it either. I'm fast. I'm real fast. I'm like rodeo fast. Like 8 seconds and I'm out of there. Bing! And I'm crazy, a lot of drama. And then I hop off and my buddy comes in dressed like a clown to distract her. We corral her into the closet, shut the door, high five. PBR, bitch! My wife said to me the other day, she's like, we should spice it up in the bedroom. I was like, really? What are you thinking about? She's like, we should get a dildo. Oh. I was like, how about we use my cock? I'm not subbing this guy out for anybody. She's like, but they come in different colors. I was like, he turns purple, grab him at the base. That's a woman's invention, not a man's invention. A man would never make something to replace him during sex.
If it was a man, it would be something you could turn on afterwards to cuddle with her and listen to her shitty stories about her mom. Right? Or better yet, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. And you need to learn this. Something you could turn on 20 minutes beforehand and do all that grunt work you don't want to do. Kiss behind her legs and her underarms, all that boring stuff. Kind of like a starting pitcher, okay? He throws 8 innings. All of a sudden, you get the call. Brett's head of the big lefty. We need him to close this bitch down. You hear the music in the background. Johnny, you're a boy. Make a big noise now. And the street's gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on. You're putting your taking your glasses off. Putting that black shit under your eyes. Waving, y'all, and you come running in fast as shit, running to the mound. Whoa, whoa, whoa. 2 innings, that's all you gotta pitch. 2 innings. Shut her down. You get done, you hop off, and she's confused. I just got fucking smoked today. Holy shit. And then the next song on that album, and this is pretty fitting, I paid my dues. It's good alone cuddling music. Like if you're by yourself, just, I paid my dues. Time after time.
Married and Sex. I made no notes on that.
Why?
I don't know. I just didn't write down a single like question. Or...
By the way, I love that joke.
Okay.
Because I loved it. But it's not from who I am. It has no connection to me. I'm not that guy at all, but still, the idea that it was flawed. The premise was flawed.
How?
Because the premise is my wife said she wanted to spice it in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And I said, "What do you want to do?" And she said, "Let's get a dildo." Okay. No woman, you get a vibrator. That's the problem. Is that you wouldn't? No woman would say, "Let's get a dildo and bring that into the bedroom." Because that's my premise.
You want one of the things that you already have.
Yeah, I go, how about we just use my cock?
Yeah.
But that line, that punchline got a good laugh. But when I said vibrator, it never got a good laugh. But when I said dildo, it did get a good laugh because it did make sense. And then I just make my wife look stupid. Like, she's like, I want a dildo. Like, let's stop using your dick. Like, it made no sense. But the whole premise was, and by the way, writing from a voice that's not mine was... why would I want something that could sub out? I'm not subbing this guy out for anybody. I want someone who does all the grunt work I don't want to do.
Like cuddle at the end of the day.
Kiss behind her neck, kiss her knees, get her ready like a starting pitcher, and then I come in like a closer. Johnny, you're a boy, make a big noise now. Or whatever. You know, we were rocking.
Play out closers.
Yeah, and it's like, and I just saw John Rocker in my head running to the fucking mound, like me just running in the room, just fucking 2 innings. And I loved it, but I bailed on that joke. Like right after this album, I bailed on that joke. I'm having to sing a song every time.
Yeah, I would notice that. I was like, you've sung quite a few verses of this song in here.
Yeah, and then I end with like, and you know what the next song on that album is? And I don't even know if it is the next song on that album. I paid my dues. I was like, great, that's great cuddling alone music. I really think I was, in a weird way, I was like, I wonder how Dave Attell would do my act.
Right.
Like, I really, because like, he was a hero of mine, and I didn't know what I was doing on stage.
That's great cuddling alone music. I don't do good impressions.
But like, yeah, but that was like, I didn't mind that bit at the time.
Yeah.
But now I look back and I'm like, oh, fuck. Leanne, we're critiquing my album. What was it?
Dead bird.
Oh, are you fucking kidding me?
The dog brought you a dead bird?
Cat.
Oh, are you shitting me? Did the girl see it?
Oh, yeah.
What did the cat put it on? Your pillow?
He put it in the same place every time. Where? Right in front of that one of those red chairs. And then he just starts yelling, like, meow, meow.
Oh, really?
Like a certain meow. And Isla said, he got a bird or a mouse or something. And I went in the living room and this was in the living room.
Wow, killed
it. Right now, Leanne is holding a dead bird.
With his neck all broken.
Fucking, why doesn't he catch rats?
He did.
But yeah, but he just brings them and lets them go in our house.
Poor little thing.
Ugh.
Circle of life.
I guess it's a circle of life.
Poor little thing. Cats are vicious hunters.
You should put that bird, I mean, you should do something with it.
Like what?
Put it in a friend's car.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, exactly. You get it.
Yeah.
Just as you're leaving, put it in the back seat. They won't.
It's so pretty. I want to
Dead Bird.
I don't even think Leanne listened to my first album.
She said she hadn't heard it in a long time when I just saw her when I was coming.
Oh, yeah?
In. Yeah.
This would be my beer commercial. If I made a beer commercial, it would be a guy just like me. Like, kind of overweight, a little sweaty, thinning hair, big cock. And I'd be sitting at a desk in like a short sleeve shirt with a tie and a name tag. You don't want a fucking name tag job. Write that down. That's a shitty job when they come up to you and they're like, so, Bert. Oh, that's a silly name. Where's Ernie? And you're like, ah, it's my boss cover. I call him Ernie. It'd be a guy just like me, name tag, tie, short sleeve shirt. And then another guy would come up to me behind my desk, and he's like an older, fatter, balder version of me, right? Same long sleeve, same short sleeve shirt, same tie, and he comes up yelling at me, Crazier, I said those need to be fixed and filed by 5 o'clock. If that's not done, that's your ass. I will fire you faster than you can say quicker than me. And then all of a sudden the phone rings, and it's my wife, and she's like, I'm pregnant again. We're having another baby. Oh, God. You're going to have more health insurance. And my world's spinning out of control. I reach into my desk. I pull out a Heineken, and you hear a voice go, make it all go away.
Beer commercial. The only thing I know that was
wrote
said,
that in college.
Write that down. I was like,
I wrote that in college.
Wrote that in college.
It's like one of the first jokes I ever wrote.
And then you had been doing it on
right
stage.
Right after. And then no.
Leanne, did you like this album?
Yeah,
what did you? Hold on. What did you think of Bert's comedy at this point?
I'll tell you exactly. You ready?
Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly what she thought. She saw me do stand up. I got in the car and I said, "What did you think?" She goes, "Honestly." And I go, "Yeah." She goes, "I think you're smarter than that."
Really?
Yeah. Really.
He was smarter than that.
Yes.
This is like
right.
Not good enough.
No, it's not. No. It's beginning, Bert.
It's serviceable. He gets laughs. Yeah.
It's like Bert with one training wheel.
Yeah.
You kind of go, but if you, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, I have two children in the bathtub.
Okay.
It's the Atlantic City of what your Vegas would eventually become.
Yeah. At an hour, it was hard to sit through. 20 minutes, I bet I could. I bet I'd look like I knew it. I bet I'd look like I was desirable. What's the next one?
Kids, girls, and advice. Kids, what? Kids, what?
Kids, girls, and advice?
Yeah. Is that the name of it?
Yeah, it is. Okay. But I don't even know what it is.
It says that you're worried about your girls growing up and being hookers.
Don't be a whore.
Don't be a whore, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you worried about that at all? Or was that just like what you think you're supposed to say?
No, I've always had a fucking distaste for whores.
Okay.
I've never really appreciated whores. I dated a girl in college who fucked everyone behind my back.
Yeah.
And I just disgust me. And so, like, one of my things is, like, if I can raise my daughters to have sex with, like, six people their entire life, I will have done my job right.
Really?
Yeah, because fucking I have a problem for a girl who finds her worth in fucking other people. What was that he had in his mouth?
Something big, like a big grub or something.
God damn. That was my big problem. And I had a bunch of jokes about the fear of raising whores that, like, I don't know if I talked about the finger in the mouth. And then that's the next album, I think.
Uh-uh.
You're expecting? Yes, I am. Oh, so you're drinking just a Coke. Okay. That's awesome. Boy or girl? I got another girl. We're just hoping it's white. Oh, I can see the head. Is it kinky hair or is it straight? Looks straight. Oh, okay, I'll keep pushing then. Is that the man? That's the. You want a boy, right? Every guy wants a boy. Every guy wants a boy. But let me tell you something. Girls are awesome too. Not now, like, but when they're little. No, I mean, you know, I have a hard time not dealing, but listening to women and understanding their problems. And I mean, my wife will just cry for no reason at all. Just, huh? But I needed a good cry. Like, we'll be out at dinner and she'll start crying. I'm like, honey, shut that shit up. They're gonna think I beat you. They're hard to deal with now, but because you're a guy, you know this, and if you have a boy, you got tons of advice to give a boy. But if you have a girl, what advice do you give a girl? You're like, oh, don't be a whore.
one rule around here. We call that the golden rule. Don't be a whore. You know what? I don't like you sucking on these bottles. Dude, you're not. That's one of the things. If you've had a kid, that's one of the first time we had our baby. The very first night. Very first night, she starts crying at 2 in the morning. And that's a scary cry. Because up until now, it's just been you. Even with her, she takes care of her pretty good. 2 in the morning, my wife just gave birth. My daughter starts crying. The first thing I thought is, like, someone needs to get that shit. And then I was like, oh my God, I call my mom. So I get up and I can't get her to stop crying. And the nurse comes in and the nurse goes, that's okay. Put your pinky in her mouth and let her suck on it. And I was like, what? She'll be fine. So I just put my pinky in her mouth and she starts going, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, no, 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 no. I don't want some little girl that gets a freaked out starts chugging cocks to relax. Oh, I'm having a rough day. Go, 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 go. Oh, there we go. I'm going to turn around. That was a close one. I almost cried. But it's tough because, you know, that scares me. Because if you have a boy, anyone's got a boy, I'm going to give you great advice for your son. Because that was what stressed me. I was like, I don't have any advice to give her. I'm going to lead her down the wrong path in life because I haven't listened to women my whole life. A son, I can fill a son up with advice. Here's great advice if you guys have a boy, okay? You sit him down and he's like, seventh grade. And you go, hey, little man, little me. If you're ever going to take a dump on the hood of your ex-girlfriend's car, take your pants off all the way. You know what I'm talking about, right? Because when you drop them to your knees and you start going two, you also go one. That's why they call it two. It's one plus another one. And it happens all right here. A puddle of you right there. And you're going to monkey tail. You don't want to stop. You're like, ah, ah. That's great advice for a boy. But this is the stressful part, and I've already done the work. It's a free ride for you. Here we go. You ready? Advice for a girl. This is brilliant advice. If anyone has a girl, use it. Write it down, use it. Hopefully you guys will wait a while, but... Right? We've learned a lot tonight, haven't we? I'm ready to send you out in the world. Don't go to fucking prison, I'll tell you that right now. They knock your teeth out and turn you into a sock puppet. You don't want that shit. I just gotta scare the fuck out. You think you want that shit? Sit in the shower, no teeth. Straight and narrow. This is the advice for a girl. Here's what you do. You go into a room and she's like 15. 15, 14, right before they start getting evil. I've seen those movies, 13 or whatever. Oh, you get them young, and you go into a room and you go, honey, can I talk to you? And she's gonna go, sure, dad, what's up? But listen, I want to talk to you, father to daughter. She's gonna go, okay, because they're really sweet then. Okay, and go, honey, if you're ever thinking about letting a guy videotape you having sex with him, and she'll go, dad, but then you snap her off and go, I know, right now you're like, I would never do that, but one night in college you'll be all, let's fucking do it. Listen to me, I'm your father. Talk really loud during the entire production and say things like, it's so small and it smells weird. Are you gonna cry this time? Because he's not showing that fucking tape to anybody. Not a fucking soul. That doesn't make its way out at a bachelor party. Why are there red bumps all over it? It's so skinny. Is it supposed to taste like radishes? That's great advice for a girl. You can use that. What do you do? Oh, wow. Oh, you just got pregnant. Well, I guess. Well, it's so funny. My brain right now is trying to do math. Like, I'm trying to do math in my brain, but my brain's not... He's like, say, you're a faggot. And I'm like, what? Weird. And I'm like, hang on, I'm trying to do math here. He's like, hey, nine plus four, suck it. Oh, yeah, I guess you could do that.
I'm trying to subtract 9 from the months, and then I start, and I go, okay, September. And then I end up going January, February, March, April, May, June, July, October, November. Oh, okay. You got pregnant in December? It's a good Christmas. You're going to have a blast. What are you going to name it?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. What if you're going to name it as a boy and name it after him? Mulan? Whatever you name it, don't name it Romeo Thundercock.
But yeah, that was my advice. Don't be a whore, and I think that was all I said.
What do you think about, yeah, just like you don't want them getting videotaping themselves if they do, like...
Talk really loud during the entire production.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like you take the stance of someone who's like, I'm not going to tell you not to do it because you're going to do it, but just don't let
them... Oh, is that bit in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But pretty much you're saying, like, don't let them use the video.
Yeah. That's your stance. My whole point was, like, look, I know who you are. I know and I still stand this by this. I know where you come from. I know who your dad is. I know who your mom is. I know what we did. And I'm not going to tell you not to do anything. I know you're going to do it anyway. It's like my advice now with drugs is just take half. Like, that's the advice I'd have to my daughters. Just take half. Don't be a fucking hero. There's no reason to fucking see Jesus your first time. Take half. See if you enjoy it.
And then go from there.
Yeah. And so, like, my advice to my daughters was, like, look, I can't say you're not going to videotape yourself having sex. My only goal is to protect you. So if you do, talk really loud. And I wrote that because there was a guy in college named Andy, I will just say.
Yeah.
And it's not – and by the way, it's not Andy Sheftall. But – there was a guy named Andy in college who had videotaped him and his chick having sex, and he showed it to us, and he showed it to us with the volume off. And I remember one of our buddies, and it was like he had put it in the closet. He had put it in the closet and videotaped. And I think she had known, but who knows if she knew, but we watched them. I don't remember if they knew or she didn't, but it was on mute. And I was like, why do you have it on mute? And he was, I didn't get any audio. I didn't get any sound. And we're like, what do you mean you didn't get any sound? He's like, there was a sock on it or something. I go, bullshit, turn it up. He's like, no, turn it up. And he turned it off. And we started making fun of him going, wait, what did she say? And I bet she was just saying shit like, who knows what she said? But the idea that he didn't...
was embarrassed enough.
Yeah, that he didn't put it on. It was like, just like... So then that was where that joke kind of spawned from.
Yeah. Do you worry at all about your girls eventually, like, dating somebody like, I don't know, somebody like me?
Not you.
But somebody like me?
No, not you.
Okay.
Like Redman, yeah.
Someone like that.
Yeah.
You worry about like...
Oh, yeah.
Some guy who just wants to like...
Because I know Brian's such a sweet guy, but Brian's... Like Brian's a sweet guy as a friend.
Yeah.
And he's actually a very caring person.
Yeah.
And he's super sensitive. And I think he'd make a great boyfriend, but...
He likes to fuck sluts.
And he likes to have a lot of different sluts.
Yeah.
I think. I mean,
seems like it.
It seems like it. And so like my fear would be that... They'd fall in love with someone like that because I know that
who wouldn't respect them in return.
Yeah, I wouldn't return it. Yeah. And like, I want them to find someone like me who, like, if I have sex with you, I'm definitely going to fall in love with you.
You're going to want to start dating you.
I'm going to want to, and I'm going to have a hard time when you break up with me. That's you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's you right now, but I think that's who you are historically.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, not right now, but yeah.
Not right now, but you'd fall in love easily.
I've done it in the past. It's been a couple years. Maybe a year. I'm not
maybe
sure
what I'll do is I'll release all of these CDs on my podcast and do a 6-hour podcast of just all of these fucking tapes that are unedited and just see exactly how bad I was.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was like... And by the way, it's not bad compared to the fact that I am on stage and I am working, but it's just like you look at me now and you're like, oh, this is not...
You have so much go-nowhere chatter in here. You're just chattering. It's like, why are you leaving this in?
Well, can I tell you this? In all honesty, that's something...
Nowhere.
It's the reason... It's one of my weaknesses is that I have the ability to not say anything on stage sometimes and still get laughs.
Oh, right.
So I think sometimes it's been a weakness is that I can just fuck around and not really talk about much and still get laughs and get the energy with me and literally... And I think it was one of the things I learned quickly in New York is I didn't have any fucking material.
Yeah, you can finesse jokes.
Yeah.
I saw this in the last week. I saw this twice, and it made me really think of it. I saw a guy at Cabin, one of like the bar rooms, you know, like a 6-7 year comic, and he said something, and then he goes, "Oh no, I messed that up," but it got a laugh though.
Yeah,
he goes, "Oh, I messed it up. I meant to say this. It made no sense." And then I saw Marina Franklin just doing a riff, And then she got a laugh. She goes, what did that even mean? That didn't even mean anything.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, I haven't seen any of those comics stop and go, hey, crowd, what did you laugh at?
Yeah.
What was it you were laughing at when that didn't even make any sense? So why did you laugh?
Yeah. It's one of the things that like I admired about Chris Rock was that Chris Rock would literally turn off Chris Rock yeah. to work on jokes. And I don't do that. Like he would not be Chris Rock when he worked on a joke.
Robbie told me Kevin Hart did that in Montreal. We did a preview show before a big show.
Yeah.
You know, and he was just like, feel like, hey, I'm doing this. Here's my punchline. Here's my setup. Here's my next punchline. And he was like, what was that? He goes, I just want to see what the jokes work. I'll put the Kevin Hart on top of it tomorrow.
Yeah, but we're not famous enough to do that yet.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, it's like a fucking weird middle ground where like last night I was working on both shows. I worked on material for half an hour, all new material.
Yeah.
For both shows in Tampa.
Okay.
And it's all about, who knows what it's about.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I could finesse laughs out of them
mm-hmm.
by just moving my eyes.
Yeah, you're too good to bomb. To fully bomb, you're too good.
Yeah, yeah, if that makes sense.
You just know how to, like, do stuff now. You know how to make a funny face or do
and
whatever.
And it sucks that you're getting, like, paid more. So now now even writing, you're like, well, fuck, I got to turn it on even if I'm writing.
Yeah. You're still trying to hit, like, as best you can. Even when you're, like, working on a new stance or golf swing, you're still trying to hit the ball a mile. You know? A new grip.
It's funny because I feel like podcasts and radio are where I'm getting bits these days.
Yeah. Like so what?
I know, but it's like I feel like that's the workout room.
Oh, yeah, a lot of it. Bird mentioned that. It was like people like, oh, you did this in your podcast. It goes, yeah, this is the first time I thought of it, and then I made it into a bit.
Yeah. I made some joke on Opie and Anthony about...
That was fun?
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was so good to be back there, like, because it's like...
It's been a while, huh?
It's been a fucking 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And we were talking about something, and I talked about how Porky's is like...
The movie?
You look at Porky's now, and it's just straight up rape. They're just raping. Like, you look at 16 Candles, they drug a girl, and the boyfriend says to this kid, hey, take her for a little while. That's what happened with the Steubenville 7.
Yeah.
They just took a fucking girl that was drunk and took her around town.
Wow.
That is the plot to 16 Candles.
Wow, you're right.
And I was like, I talked about that, and I don't remember how much they...
Yeah, he was so nice to give people access to his drunk girlfriend.
Yeah, take her. Here's my parents' car. Have fun with her.
Oh.
Think about that.
I saw this stuff in Edmonton that said all these billboards over the bathroom, and it says, just because you're her knight or something, like, just because you're getting her home doesn't mean you can... take whatever you want from her.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like, don't be that guy.
Yeah.
Who drags a drunk girl home just to fuck.
Oh, I remember I had a rape joke one time. And now I look back, I'm like, why would I ever have a rape joke? I have two daughters. The fuck? But it's that weird, like, you're writing from a place where you go, I need my rape joke. I need my...
Oh, yeah.
I need my this joke. I need my that joke. I need to be at top par with everyone else.
Yeah. But you just don't have... Oh, Jesus.
And then you look back and you're like...
And then they're saying you have to try to find your voice. I'm like, I know my voice. What do you mean? I talk about racial humor.
The rush to be a working comic is so fucking... The race is a race you're running against yourself. And if you're smart, you wouldn't do it. You just fucking take your time and just get good.
Yeah. Yeah, until you absolutely come out where you're like a killer. Like Glover Teixeira.
Or at least let there be no fucking... That's why people don't want you videotaping them working on shit.
Yeah, like this, it's going to go out there... Stanhope had a bit. I saw him doing King King. The last time I really drove really drunk was after that show. But he just had this whole bit about people videotaping. And he was talking about it's all grainy and shaky and it's not done yet. He goes, I'm not even mad at you videotaping. Just your editing skills suck.
Yeah. All right,
two more bits. Jesus.
All right, what's our two more bits?
Old man and the last piece of advice. Last bit of advice for the drunks.
Lesson number 5. You're almost done. I can almost send you off into the world. Anything else? Any questions you have real quick? Anything. 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 You ever fucked a rolled up towel? Try it. Try it. Feels just like it. I learned that from an old man. Old people aren't useless. I swear to God, sir. They aren't. They're fun. You gotta get drunk with an old man. It's like reading a dirty history book. They'll tell you stories about the Korean War you've never heard. Oh, yeah, me and the boys, when we landed on shore, we played a game called Smiles.
got one of them whores, put her on her table, she started sucking cock. First one to smile had to pay for it. You're like, oh. I love old people.
Old man was it was a story that an Iraqi veteran who had told me about killing people, like in college, he had gone to Iraq and then come back to finish college.
Yeah.
Had told me about killing people and about getting prostitutes. It was a story he told me about it, and I just morphed it into my bit.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah. He was like, we used to play a game called Smiles. You ever heard of Smiles? I was like, no. He's like, you put a chick on her table, she starts sucking her dicks, and the first one that smiled had to pay for it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. And on my head, I was like, and this is back when I first started doing stand-up, that I was like, anything that I thought was funny got on stage.
Right.
Like, now I'd never do that. Now I have really good stories that I've heard people tell me that, yeah, I would never fucking share on stage. But 5 years in, you're like...
Story I heard.
It's good. It works.
Chris Hardwick said this once early on open mic times. He was going, you know, this happened to me last week, and then he like made an aside, which means happened to me or any of my non-comedian friends.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you're just allowed to take those.
Yeah, you're allowed to, but I don't do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that now, nah, only because now I'm like, I don't know if you fucking heard that from somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just trying to make me laugh, you know?
Yeah, you don't know where the source was.
Yeah. I remember someone told that joke. That was like a joke I had for a while, and someone else told it.
You know a joke I had?
Who?
Such a child.
But someone told that joke, and I was like, that's my bit. And then someone's like,
Where did you do it?
And then they're like, really? I go, no, that's my bit. They must have heard me do it. And the other guy's like, no, I heard this guy tell me about it. And then I'm like, oh, you know what? That might be like a donkey punch,
right,
type thing.
Yeah. A lot of comics have that too. We're like, that's my bit. It's like what that thing that we all did in high school that everyone, yeah, across America did.
Yeah. Like if you want to be original, write directly from your life and no one else's.
Yeah.
That is the lesson in this.
Yeah.
And then the last bit I had was... touching cops' faces.
Yeah. The weird thing is, too, you frame this at some point early on as like, I'm going to give this kid advice. And then you just sort of like peter out on that yeah, through line. Then you give a girl advice. And then you give...
Last bit of advice. You ready? Here we go. Drinking and driving. Don't do it. Bad. It's bad. Well, we're all going to do it, but you should.
What examples we lead. Holy shit. I say don't do it, and everyone goes, yeah, it's bad. It's so bad. You know you're too drunk to drive when you get in your car and you put a quarter in the ignition? Are you going to play two-player? He's like, no, I think I'm driving. You're making the noises of the car as you drive.
And if you do get arrested, just because you're going to jail, that doesn't mean you have to have a bad time. Have fun with it. Pretend you're in the back of a taxi the whole time.
So, how long have you been in the United States? Take a ride here. You move over here with your brother. You're going to send to the family later. Maybe buy a restaurant. Right here's good. Or keep going. I'll go wherever you're going.
You know what cops hate? You know what cops hate? I learned this the hard way. When you touch their faces. They freak the fuck out like they never had their face touched. But, Latinos, this will get you out of some trouble. Try this next time. When the cop pulls you over, okay? What's that? What? Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys do that? Oh, no, I'm playing this. And they're like, I'll call Amiga. And you're like, oh, hey, I'm right here.
No, no reason to do that.
You know what? Take me to jail.
Take her right here.
This is what you do. When the cop comes up to your window and he comes up and he goes, excuse me, senor. Do they do that to you? Do they? That's fucking, I wouldn't do that. We don't know. White people, we just get pulled over and they're like, you can go. No. Hit a homeless guy. They cross the street like lost cattle, just speed up and Joe Black that bitch. Fuck you, Frogger. This is what you do. When he comes up to your window and he goes, excuse me, sir, do you know why I pulled you over? You gotta own this shit. Don't fucking half-ass this. Own that shit. This is what you do. Don't even pretend you're not even listening to him. Just like stare straight ahead, and he's just gonna go, "Excuse me, sir. Do you know what?" When you hear him go, "Oh," when he goes, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" Oh, when he goes over, this is what you do. Bold, powerful, confident. Take your finger, put it to his lips, and go, "Shh." And hold it there, okay? He'll be silent. He'll go, "Ah." And gently, so he knows you're in control, stroke his mustache. It's Texas. He'll have a fucking mustache. And then take off. He'll be on the side of the road for 15 minutes. What the fuck just happened? You guys have been awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh yeah, the white people getting off with warnings. It was just such an easy stance on it,
dude. Everything on this whole fucking
it was
hour
like
was
I've
easy.
Heard that so much.
Yeah. Oh, the one joke I had was,
see, we just get off the war. They're just like, all right, be careful.
Yeah,
you we guys.
Yeah, but I mean, we're for, let's.
I've never been with a car with a black guy who's gotten pulled over for being black.
You haven't?
No. I've heard my friends say they have gotten pulled over for being black. I've never seen it.
I'm trying to think if I have.
So any of those things come from other people. Like, my ideal for this is like prison rape jokes, where I'm like, where are we getting this? No one I know, and definitely not me, has ever been in prison. Yeah. I'm being prison raped. Like, these jokes are based on other people's jokes.
Uh-huh.
That whole idea that happens is not based on anything from my life.
Yeah.
That I've observed.
This joke, that was me. That's an example of me trying to milk a bit to get fucking 5 minutes out of it as opposed to two.
Yeah.
So, like, right after this, I did Kimmel, and I had that joke, and I showed them that joke, and they're like, "That's great, but it needs to be a lot shorter."
Yeah.
And Barry Katz sat with me, and he fucking was like, "What's the joke? You touch the cop face, and you take off. That's a joke? Then that's all we tell." And I remember, like, right after that, telling that joke on stage, going, "God damn it, man.
What?
I milked the fuck out of that joke, and I made it, like, long and windy when it could have been short and tight and
short
good.
Short and sweet and give you more time for other jokes."
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that joke was written with me, workshopped with Patrice.
What do you mean?
What
did you workshop with Patrice? O'Neill, where are you going? Nice.
So, you want anything?
Sure.
No, I gotta get a... I just ate like such garbage for the last 2 days. Candy and... I don't know. Maybe some fries.
Surprise me.
Curly fries or regular?
Of course curly fries.
Of course. I'm getting them too. Another day.
Surprise me.
Get him a salad, throw it in his face. That's how you surprise him.
No.
Two low-calorie tacos.
No. No, I make it rain.
No.
I want like a Jumbo Jack. I want the fucking...
A Jumbo Jack?
I'll just eat here then. Fine, Leanne.
A Jumbo Jack?
Yeah, give me like a big fucking...
What are you going to eat, Leanne?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never really eaten Jack in the Box except for the tacos.
You know what?
Really good tacos.
Really? Oh, yeah, I remember the tacos.
I'll tell you what. I'll take a couple tacos and then a couple cheeseburgers. Yeah, no, just regular cheeseburger, like a cheeseburger, but like with some tomatoes and shit on it. Whatever. You know what? Mate, just surprise me. What looked show in there was
too much pressure.
This is way too much pressure.
It's Mother's Day. I shouldn't have to make any decisions.
We'll go to Jack in the Box for you.
Yeah. So
if you wait 20 minutes.
So Patrice,
yeah,
I got cut off on a flight to Scotland.
Cut off.
They asked me to stop drinking.
On a flight?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I knew she was about to say it. And so I put my finger on her lips and went, shh.
And to the stewardess.
To the stewardess.
Sir, I'm afraid we can't, shh.
I went, shh. But I was so fucking hammered.
Yeah.
And I was...
You put your finger on her lips?
And she was not cool with it. And I didn't drink the rest of the flight. But then I drank. When I got to Scotland Airport, I think I drank at Scotland Airport. And then I got to the house and I was fucking hammered.
Yeah.
And I told Patrice a story, And Patrice thought it was fucking hilarious. And that was like a big deal. Because like, Patrice is one of my guys that hung out at the Boston Comedy Club and I knew and was a friend with. And I always wanted to make him laugh.
Yeah.
He was like, that's funny. You got to tell that on stage. So that night I went on stage and I told it. And I told it that it happened to the stewardess. But it didn't work. It was like I was a dick.
Oh.
And it was like I was an alcoholic and I was a dick. It didn't work. So the next night, and I'm trying to recollect about the best of this way down, the way this went down. But the next day, we're sitting eating breakfast, and Patrice was like, "You need to make it. You need to know what you said. You don't know what you said." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You have no idea what you told that audience. You just told a story. You don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "You don't know that when you touch a man's face, you take his power away."
Patrice is always in a shit like that.
Yeah, and he touched my face at the table, and I remember being like. Like it was like weird. He had his finger on my mouth, and I went, "What the fuck?" And he goes, "Do you see what just happened? Who'd be the best person that happened to?" And I was like, "A cop." And he goes, "A cop." I think he probably said a cop. And he goes, "You should say you got pulled over and you touched a cop's face and you told him shh." And I was like, "That's right. That would be good." And he goes, "Cause when he basically walked me through without saying." To tell how to tell the joke.
Yeah.
He walked me through why the joke
figuring
was funny.
Figuring out how to do it on your own.
Yeah, figure like teaching me how to do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, so, and I don't think he said like if you got pulled over, but if you touched a man's face, if you touched a cop's face, if you were in prison and you touched a, like, and you know, it's like, I forget the, it's a long time ago that this happened, but I remember I went on the stage that night and this is very revealing, but like, I don't care, you know, I'm fucking a little bit past this, but like, I remember thinking, how would Dave Attell tell the joke?
Really?
Yep. And I was like, Dave Attell would say, "You know what cops hate? When you touch their faces."
Yeah, he would say it like that.
And I was like, that's how I'll write it. Because I was like, I don't know how to write a joke. I didn't know how to write a fucking stand-up. By the way, when I wrote that joke with Patrice, I've been doing stand-up for like 13 months. And so...
Why did you go to Edinburgh?
Because I got a deal. I got a deal 6 months in.
You got so much stuff early on.
Oh, you have no fucking idea. And so Patrice helped me figure that joke out. Because then it's just, I touched the cop's face and the cop freaked out. You're about to hear, this is about, you want to talk about writing from a real place? Okay.
Yeah.
Is that Isla? Isla, come here. I want to ask you a question. So this is, when I say I'm writing from a real place now.
Yeah.
Something will happen and I'll just talk about it directly as is. Okay. So there was an almost kidnapping at a school adjacent to Isla's. So we had to come up with a safe word. A word that you could say to Isla that...
Won't offend me.
What?
That
won't offend her.
A word that only me and Isla know. And we're going to have to change this word now because I'm telling you. Yeah. And I've told it before. I've done it on stage lately. And we needed a word that was like obscure that no one would know to say to Isla that they would know they're safe. So like our friends could say it to Isla and it wouldn't be like Agnes, which is our street, or Priscilla, which is our dog. So our safe word is, and Isla came up with this. What's our safe word, Isla? You ready for this? This is the genius I live with.
Okay. Motherfucker.
Motherfucker?
Motherfucker. What person's going to say that to a fucking 7-year-old who's trying to kidnap them?
So that's how they know? To be like, are you somebody I should go with?
She goes, yeah.
Motherfucker.
If you say motherfucker, Isla goes, all right, you're safe. So our buddy, so when one of our buddies had to pick up Isla from school, and he goes, Isla, I'm ready to take you. And Isla goes, what's the safe word? And he goes, I know the safe word. And he goes, Isla, I'm not going to say it. And she goes, say the safe word. And he comes in and he goes, motherfucker. And Isla looks at him and goes, I can't hear you. But I feel like now I just pull like strict bits out of my story. Now, what I would like to do with my set now in life.
Okay, hold on. This will be the end. Yeah, go ahead.
What?
Yes, sorry. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. Keep going.
What I would like to do now is tell stories that happened in my life. Mm-hmm. Keep telling stories and always have stories. Have 2 or 3 stories in a set that aren't too long, but are fun.
What's not too long?
12 minutes is too long.
Okay.
That's the machine story. But I'm never going to stop telling that. I'm never going to be able to
stop
telling
that. You think
it's too long? 12 minute story is very long to tell on stage.
I did the Bobby Lee shit on Bobby Lee's car. It was 19 minutes.
Pete Corielli. You know Pete?
Yeah.
He needs to be on your storytelling show.
Really?
He has the best story about smuggling drugs into Beirut.
Oh,
that
Beirut.
I've ever heard.
Wow.
And so, I would like to have, I'd like to have a couple 6-minute stories that I can tell in my set, sprinkle in, that are good, tight, good endings, lots of jokes inside. I want to take my stories and I want to rewrite them and put jokes inside. After this book's done, I'm done with fucking being married to like the fucking dot verbatim. I need to know that I can fucking, I'm gonna experiment a lot, I think, this next year.
What do you mean
year.
Dot verbatim?
Like, I like the fucking, like the story about this is how you get out of paying a check. Like, right. When I tell that, I'm very accurate to the fucking...
A weird way to title it, yeah.
I can't tell the title it the other way because someone heard it and is not a fan.
Yeah.
And so... But the problem is that he never heard me tell it.
Right.
So, when I tell it, I've always been very clear that I went right up to Tony Woods and said, I think I just did something. And Tony goes, no, you didn't. He's fucking with you.
Right.
Like, I've always been clear about that. But that's why I always told the story. And I always tell my stories like, but I'm gonna work on flying dildos. I'm going to work on Ralph Sampson. I'm going to work on like a bunch of these stories that I believe are defining stories in me and who I am and in my voice.
Yeah.
And then I would like to do what a little bit more of the trying to deconstruct the thought of like, right now I'm going through this thing about the commitment a child, the commitment that comes with children and the vulnerability that is attached that you would have never signed up for.
That you would have never signed up for.
I was working it out on stage this weekend.
But then you're going to use those stories in order to say something about the world, about what you've observed about the world.
I would like to not just be this storyteller.
Right.
I would like to be a little more, doing a little more conventional stand-up within my storytelling.
Yeah, multidimensional.
Like, conventional stand-up going, but not like, I don't need to do what Attell does, and I don't need to do what Biller does or Patrice does, but find what I'm doing, make it a little better, and then tell a story, and then in and out of some more kind of conventional.
To me, stories can help you illustrate the point you want to make about the world, whatever it is. Like, you know, yes. People aren't always looking out for your best interests. Case in point. This guy one time, did, you know, then you tell this whole thing.
And it would
and it's
be nice
about how you have to be careful.
It would be nice to depart from a story and get into a little bit of a bit, and then go back to the story.
Yeah, but
it's like, look, there's a fucking and you know this for a fact.
Yeah.
There are a handful of us doing storytelling correctly. There's not a ton of dudes doing it.
No, you're right.
And I'm talking about out of all the comics in the fucking world.
Right.
Like, when you think about what, and this sounds a little arrogant, but like, there are only a handful of comics telling stuff. A lot of guys are going through, the majority of guys are going through what I went through on this CD, where you don't know your voice, you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you're just trying to get by. That's the vast majority of comics.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like, and then there's a group of, and I put myself in that category because I feel like I'm definitely working in that direction.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely a working comic. So, like, And like, you look at Jeffries, I think Jeffries is doing it right.
Jeffries, Diaz, Jay Larson,
I think
Big J Okerson.
Yeah. And so, like, I would like to just keep working in that. And I also want to also say in that there's no rules for where I'm going. And then go, I don't know.
Having an outline, but not having to stick to the outline.
Right.
Where, like, this will guide me, but it won't tell me necessarily I have to do this.
I love getting away from the boat of material and swimming away and figuring out shit and always knowing I can swim back to the boat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about doing another CD.
Really?
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing another CD because I like CDs.
CDs are pretty cool. They're pretty interesting. You could do them on vinyl now, too. There's all these collectors. But, like, there's something to the audio comedy CD, which is pretty rad.
Well, it's old school.
Yeah.
It's Red Fox. It's Richard Pryor.
Fox always had that one lady in the front, two or three black ladies going, "Wah!"
Dude.
You had that on here.
That woman loved me.
She was great. She was so into it. God, you were killing her.
But like, don't you feel like there is a reverence? It's like drawing in charcoal.
Right.
Doing a CD is like drawing in charcoal.
Let's get back to the roots of it.
Let's get back to the roots of it. Like, I loved Attell's road stories.
Special, yeah.
Road work.
Yeah.
I loved it. There's also stuff I didn't like in it. I mean, I'm always going to be a huge Attell fan.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to defend me critiquing whatever he's doing because I've said for the past fucking 20,
well, hour and
15,
a half.
15 years.
About it a bunch, yeah,
15 years I've been doing stand-up. I've respected him to the utmost. I do not, and there's parts people will not like in me, but I love the fucking comedy CD. The powerful comedy CD that goes, boom, 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 boom. I listen to Burr driving through fucking Appalachia is the one. And it's just, there's something beautiful letting your imagination
run wild.
Wander.
Yeah, Simone said this once, and I was talking about some bit. Because I asked Dane before I did my CD. I was like, do you worry about, like, not being, like, visual enough? Because, like, you're, you know, they can't see you. So some of the stuff, like, especially act outs are like... And he goes, yeah, it was. I listened to my first CD. It was terrible. There was a 7-minute fucking Godzilla act out that is not funny on audio.
Oh, Dane's first CD I bought and listened to and was like, this is kind of tough to sit through.
Yeah, because it's so much acted out. So he said he tried to move away from that after that. But I asked Simone about it. I was like, what about these certain things you don't... I think I had the word rape crouch in mind. And I was like, if people don't aren't gonna know what it is, he goes, you know what? When I listen to stuff and I don't know what it is, it makes me want to know a little more. Just makes me wish I had been there.
Yeah.
But just here or there.
Yeah.
Makes me like, oh, wow, I wonder. And then you can just like make it whatever you want, you know?
Yeah.
Pretend like he did whatever you want him to have done.
I have an affinity. I feel like I haven't yet created a, obviously with this is proof in the pudding.
Yeah.
Created a great comedy CD. Even Comfortably Dumb's available in CD, but yeah. it's meant for the stage. So I never really ever thought out how to make, you know. And it's like, I don't want to do a theater show. Yeah. I don't want to do a theater show.
Why do people do theaters all the time? Happy Mother's Day from Jack in the Box.
All right, Leanne just showed back up with Jack in the Box.
She's about to make it rain. Nice. Yeah. You got 4 bags of Jack in the Box.
Small and sensible. Two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are you and the girls? Mm-hmm. Nice. Taco sauce. That's okay.
It's all right.
All right. Happy Mother's Day.
Did you live in New York with Bert?
No. Here, Leanne, into a mic.
Oh.
Wait, I have a question. Leanne, where do you think my comedy's going now?
Compared to when you first saw me do stand-up.
Where's it going?
Like, oh, yeah, it's the
direction. You see it taking.
I have no idea. What do you... I'm unclear. What do you mean? Like, what kind of jokes are you telling?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, in the beginning, it seemed like with this CD, it was a lot of racial material. And
oh, definitely is out. Yeah, that's
yeah,
more.
A lot of stereotypes. Like, let me tell you what stereotypes are. Yeah, where do you see him doing nowadays?
Well, I think probably, you know, being a parent... Yeah. It's so interesting, and every phase is so different. Like, they're so,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're specific when they're toddler.
Yeah, when they're teenagers, it's going to be a different thing.
It's going to be a wreck.
Yeah.
It's going to be, Isla is going to be lying and hiding things.
Oh, yeah. She's going to get better at lying, too.
Oh, she's going to be bad. And George is going to be emotional and sorority girl. It's going to be a nightmare. I think that's what it's going to be about.
So it'll be more of that, dealing with this family life.
I think more
life.
Of that, and maybe... Maybe politics? That's a joke.
No way.
Wait, have you listened to Ari and my podcast, Leanne?
We're trying to figure out who, if it was Obama's first term or second term.
Like, it's his second.
I know. I was right, but I wasn't like positive. I was like, I think you're wrong.
Have you been in a smoky haze for the last couple of years, maybe?
All right. Love you. Hey, what? Where do you see your comedy going?
I have fear for it.
Why?
I worry that the best is behind me.
No, you know what? Can I tell you what I hear?
Yeah, what do you hear?
I hear you getting into your stride.
Maybe.
I think right now you are... I think you did this right. I think I did it a tad bit wrong.
Yeah, well, everybody's just guessing.
Well, yeah, but I got headlining really quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I did, but I don't think I deserved it. So, it's okay.
I feel the same way about the other way, where it's like I'm getting into headlining 11, 12 years into comedy, where it's like I'm glad I waited, but at the time I was not glad.
Dude, you're so glad.
Yeah. But, I mean, I could have failed out in that time.
Do you know how many clubs I went into and they just never had me back?
They just won't. They're like, we know.
They were like, yeah, no, we're not a big fan. Yeah, we get it. We get what he does, and we've seen a lot of guys do it before.
Yeah.
San Jose Improv, I'll never work that club again. And it was like, and my numbers were shit. I had 800 people come in throughout the weekend.
Oh.
That's it. And then now you get to a place where it's like, now I just want to, like, listening to this really kind of put it in perspective. Because I held on. Well, no. How much I haven't.
Oh.
How much I need to, like, I've grown a ton now to what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
But not as much as I should have in fucking 10 years.
I think that the standards you hold yourself to grow exponentially, too. And then you start going like, fuck, I'm not, where you're like, you were crushing where you were 2 years ago.
Well,
But now you're like, ah, it's not good enough.
I
tell shits on himself all the time.
Well, I think you have to. I don't think if you don't shit on yourself, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. If you don't have a fucking respect for the fact that you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
It's almost like afterwards you're supposed to be like, that was all garbage. And right before you go, oh, I'm about to kill.
Yeah.
You know, like confident and then, but also totally unconfident about your overall.
I got into this bit this weekend and I started saying something. I started saying for the fact that like, my kids think I'm just fucking around on the road.
Yeah.
They think I'm just playing because they see me on TV and they see me do this shit. They don't, and they have no respect for the fact that I'm paying for everything. No one's saying thank you. Like, no one, I don't come home and everyone's like, oh, Dad, thanks for
waking up early.
Yeah. Thanks for doing press.
Yeah.
And fucking Saturday morning because the ticket sales were low for Saturday shows. Uh-huh. And then now we hit a bonus and that'll mean a lot because now I can get what I need out of life.
Extra trampoline.
Yeah. No one's saying thank you. And I literally heard Chris Rock going, man, you don't get the big chicken leg. Like, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm doing a Chris Rock bit.
Yeah.
And so I bailed out. I actually said on stage, I think I'm doing a Chris Rock bit right now.
We can hear the same exact thing.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know. I'll always believe I'm a shit comic and trying to get better. The Machine story taught me a lot.
Certain bits will teach you stuff, too.
Rogan was becoming friends with Rogan and getting him to, when he said one time on his podcast, everyone make Bert tell this Machine story. You shout it out at his shows until he tells it and force him to tell this bit. And I remember thinking it was a curse. It was the fucking biggest blessing in the world because I learned how to tell a story.
Miss Pat is like that. Everybody talks about her. Like, you know, at tables, at conversations, she's telling the craziest stories. And
really?
On stage, she refused to do any of it. She would just tell these jokes and these bits. And people were like, Miss Pat, do the fucking, your life is crazy. You've had two kids at 15.
Really?
It's like you've dealt with so much madness and you can deliver it around a dinner table in a very fun, charismatic, funny way. So just take it to the stage. And then she wouldn't feel, I think now she is, but I don't know.
Told Corielli when he told the story on Cowhead Show about smuggling drugs into Beirut.
Yeah.
I go, dude, that's got to go on stage. And he goes, it's not a stage story. And I went, no, that's what we say in defense of not wanting to try.
Yeah. He's just saying you're not. Moshe Katchen does. After he's done my storyteller show a couple times, he goes, dude, every one of these stories, I think of for your show, and then I just tweak it a little bit, and it goes on stage.
Yeah. I wish I could do that. I thought I found the sweet spot. I remember, I thought I found the sweet spot. Are you ready for this?
What?
Like fucking 4 months into comedy.
Yeah.
Because I did DC Benny's storytelling room.
Oh, yeah.
Let me rephrase that.
He's
DC
great.
Benny and I started a storytelling room. Because I knew people, and DC was the one that could get the comics.
Okay.
So I could help pack it out with young kids.
Okay.
And so me and him went on every night. And it was like Tuesday nights at a club, and everyone was there. And I remember Chappelle showed up. Chappelle did it.
Really?
Chappelle did material. I remember DC was pissed. He was like, man, I thought it's storytelling.
Yeah.
But I remember I told like two stories. I talked about getting fired from Barnes & Noble for working on my underwear in the basement. And I talked about fighting a black guy in high school. Both those things are fucking bits. Like both those, I literally walked to the Boston Comedy Club, did them on stage, and they worked again. And I went, motherfucker, I figured it out. But then you move to LA and you're like, oh, you need jokes.
Yeah.
You need like jokes. Oh.
You need both, really. I think it's all part of your game. One-liners, that's a part of the game too.
Yeah, yeah, you need it all. You need to be able to have one. One-liners are so important. I learned a very valuable lesson the other day. Never tickle a child with diarrhea in your bed.
Yeah.
You need those to, like, just jumpstart it. It's like a defibrillator paddle.
Yeah. And to get some laughs into a story, too. It's like, here's a punchline. Don't worry about it. Here's a punchline. It's a joke about something I just said.
So.
Get you through.
What did we learn today, guys?
What did we learn?
We learned that my first CD was horrible. But listen, I implore other comics to do this, that do this. Bring out your shit. I don't want to hear David Tell skanks for the memories. I want to hear the one he did before he was David Tell. I want to see his, yes.
I want to hear the skanks for the memories too. I'd want to hear him talk about that, how those bits were developed and stuff like that.
I think this is very, very interesting. I'd like to hear him talk about that too. But I liked the best was when I saw David Tell on that Aspen comedy special.
Oh yeah.
And he had like his hair still.
Yeah.
And he was doing like a comb over. And he was like, hey, like he was bouncy and friendly guy. I want to hear how he grew out of that.
Yeah, it's so weird when you see them, you're right. And you're like, what was that?
Yeah.
Who was that? Or you can see the, just the germinations of what they would become.
You know who would be really fun to talk to?
Who?
Larry the Cable Guy.
Talk about his early, early stuff?
Fuck yeah. And the metamorphosis into the Cable Guy?
Yeah.
Carrot Top? This could be a podcast just in and of itself.
Yeah, it's just somebody wrote online once. They like this format. I do too, a lot. But yeah, you can get different people. Well, yeah, we would talk about that in the whatever material too. Like, how did you start? How did you get this? That's what I talked about with Tom a little bit. Like, how did you get so slow on stage?
What you know? Was his answer? I started listening to that, and then I
forgot what his answer was, and how he's like come off that a little bit now.
Tom's interesting. I won't talk about it on air because I don't know if he wants me to. But like,
Thrilled was a really good album too.
I haven't listened to it.
Oh,
I started listening to it. But he's, what's the matter? I got either a
cheeseburger and a chicken nugget. So you have to go back and get it? No, that's bullshit. You're a grown woman. You don't,
Leanne. It's Mother's Day.
So she's older.
I got Isla a cheeseburger, thankless. And she wanted chicken nuggets.
She's just like resigned to it.
That's why I married that woman.
Wow. God. I'd be like, oh, well, so next time you'll get chicken nuggets. My mistake.
So I hope everyone go out and get Bert, Bert, Bert.
Get Bert, Bert, Bert. Well, whatever.
You know what? Go write a review.
Say write why a, you thought it was wrong. Say what you didn't like about it. Say no, whatever.
Do yeah. not write a review. I don't need any fucking reviews. I don't want anything negative. Just buy my book, Life of the Party. It is really good, and there's a lot of stories you haven't heard in it, and I am really proud of it. And it is available this week in stores. You can get it on Amazon, on your Kindle, on your Nook. That is the last time you're going to hear me say that on Ari's podcast ever, I promise you.
Yeah.
I'm fucking so glad this book is out.
How long did you pre-order it for?
Fucking 6 months.
Wow.
6 months it's been in pre-orders, and Jen
Kirkman, had to keep pushing.
She was like, don't stop pushing.
Jen Kover?
Jen Kirkman.
Oh, because she did a book.
She was like, don't stop pushing.
Oh, wow.
She was like, I'll tell you how many I pre-ordered, and she told me. She pre-sold a lot.
And then it got her going.
She was a national bestseller.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, it is.
So... Thank all you, right. everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Bert. I appreciate it. Follow him at Bert Kreischer.
And you don't have to put all the bits Twitter. In. You can just skip some of the ones that are really bad.
No, we're going to put them all in. Just so they have to hear it. Because honestly, when I was listening to this, I was like, wow. Because Segura's first one was like a developed comic. So I was like, oh, that made sense. And I was like, your first one was like, huh. I'm like, I hope he's willing to talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
In a buyer beware kind of situation.
Oh, I would never ask anyone to buy this CD.
Right.
Yeah. I would never say spend $10 on this CD.
I thought it was gonna be like, oh, I really like this bit because I did this.
No,
yeah, all right.
It's all half-ass bits. Wow. That hadn't been thought out yet, and I'd been headlining. It was my third headlining date ever.
Wow.
And I've been doing stand-up, I think, 5 years, 6 years tops.
Yeah, I just started featuring at that point.
Really?
Yeah, like a little bit.
We've probably been doing stand-up the same amount of time.
Maybe. Now we're like 14 years now. Almost.
I'm at 15.
15 in May. Oh, it's May. 15.
I'm 15 in... I started when I was 26. I was 15 in November.
I started 25.
So I'm coming up on 16?
In November, yeah.
Motherfucker.
15 and a half.
I need to get better.
I see that too sometimes.
With me or you?
No, with me.
Okay.
Tell you, I was saying, I had this talk with Louis about how he does an hour a year, and then I was poo-pooing some of it, where it's like, yeah, well, you can record a special a year if you want, or you can do this. I don't have that benefit. I can't go up at 3 clubs in L.A. every night I want to.
Yeah.
But then I was like, sure, I'll come with a lot of reasons why it's not going to work, and you're not really trying it.
I'll tell you what I do is that I come up with a lot of reasons that it won't work, and that just is reasons I don't write.
Yeah.
If I wrote more... I bet I'd come up with a lot more.
Yeah, like in college, I was like, I'm better at cramming. I study better when I cram. I was like, no, that's the only way you do study is when you cram. Yeah. Doesn't mean you're better at it.
I'm allergic to latex. No, I just don't like wearing condoms.
Yeah. Makes you break out in softies.
In softies.
All right, Bert Kreischer. Thank you. You go to his website. You can find the book now and his other stuff.
Life of the Party. Just get Life of the Party.
Bert.com. Life of the Party is his book.
I love you, Ari.
Yeah. I love you too. All right. right. Thank God he agreed with me. That made it way easier. The fact that he was like, yeah, this thing sucked. God, that made it easier. God, I was so fucking nervous. How am I going to do this? How am I going to go over this with him? 9 minutes. I got to go real soon. I'll edit this on the plane. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to check my Amazon link at arithegreat.com. Check all my tour dates. My New York in-town dates are going to be on there for the most part. Not the Comedy Cellar. They don't put their stuff up on Laughstub. But they tweet when I'm on the lineup, I guess, which is once every 2 weeks. mostly I'm at the Stand, Stand Up New York and other places, but check my website for all my tour dates. China, it'll be Shanghai, Macau, Beijing, Hong Kong, and cities around there. Check it out at arithegreat.com/tour. So thanks, Bert Kreischer, for doing it. I'm real excited to get Kyle Kinane's because that one was one of the best albums. Whiskey Icarus was one of the best albums of like a 2 year, 3 year period in stand up comedy albums. And then I'm also going to get Joe Rogan's Shiny Happy Jihad. And that will be interesting because that's the only album I've ever seen fully developed. I saw it go from. I mean, I saw him rehearse all those bits and get them better and then do it and then put out an amazing album. So that'll be really interesting too. Man, maybe I can speak to Gaffigan and people like that. He's got like fucking 30 albums on the top 100 of iTunes. I'm sure he could like, maybe he'd want to go over one of them. And Patton, maybe Marin. Anyway, all right. So that's it, you guys. Don't forget the London people, the England people. Hit up those clubs. I'm not going to Ireland when I'm there. It's not about running around and going to other places. It's really about testing my material and testing my stage presence in front of a foreign American, but crowd. Not American. English, I mean. English speaking. I just want to see how I do. I want to test myself in front of audiences all over the world. I want to be better. I want to keep getting better. And testing myself is one of those things. I'm going to be recording my next special. I'll find out soon exactly what the details are. We're talking about it right now with Comedy Central. I believe it'll be that week in August when I was going to film. This is not happening before it got moved to September 8th, 9th, 10th. We'll see. We'll see where I do it. But I like the idea of testing yourself. That's why I'm going to China for fucking 15 shows in front of crowds that don't know me at all. And I'm going to be able to fucking work this shit out and make any sort of weaknesses because I might have fans in the audience and I want to work those out. I want to be the best I can be. At least it's stand-up. At least it's stand-up. There's a lot of shit that I'm bad at, but at least in stand-up, I want to be the best I can be. And you know what? I'll probably never get there. I'll probably never fully realize my potential in anything. But the closer I get, the better I'll feel. And this Bert Kreischer album was fucking shit. It was awful, Bert. Guys, new comics, don't record. Don't fucking put yourself on record when you're still developing. I get it. I like to compare it to artists, to Picasso, and you want to know what periods they're going through. But until they've finished art school, until they've learned how to fucking fully paint, they shouldn't put out shows. They shouldn't go on the record. And yeah, comics, it takes a while. It takes 10 years before you get good. Before you know what you're doing. So why are you going to put shit on? Bert should take this album down. Bert, I know you're listening. You do what you want, but I think you should take the album down. Why do you want people hearing this garbage when you're a five-year comic? I mean, let them listen to it for the week or two, you know, if anyone wants to buy it. But instead, definitely go get his book. That's why we're doing this. Oh, shit, I forgot to promote the book. Damn it, now I got to go back and go to the intro. Get Bert Kreischer's book. That's why we're doing this. Hold on. Let me get it. Bert. BertBertBert.com. Okay. Here we go. If you go to BertBertBert.com, you can find it. But it's Life of the Party. It's a book. He wrote a fucking book, you guys. Bert Kreischer is one of the great American wild men, a gonzo warrior driven not by cynicism or a desire to reveal dark truths, but instead by a deep, almost essential need to have a good time no matter what. His stories track the trials and tribulations of a big-hearted dude trying to fit in, help out, party, and find himself. After all is said and done, we arrive with him at the true humility of joy. Mark Maron. So get Bert, Bert, Bert. Or pre-order it right now. It's available starting tomorrow, so you can pre-order it now. It'll just ship to you tomorrow. But go to BertBertBert.com/book, and you can find it. That's why I did this, everybody. So if you like this episode, go get his book, and you also get a book out of it. You don't just have to donate him money. You get a book out of it. All right, so BertBertBert.com. Thank you for doing it, Kreischer. All right, so that's it. I'm glad I did one of someone who did an album too early. I'm not doing that anymore. So any fucking new comics, I'm not doing your album. This was good as a lesson of like what you should be careful of. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did that. Just for that reason of like, oh, there's lots of albums out of there that are too early. So this is one example of them, and now I'm done with that. I'm only doing great albums from now on. All right. That's it. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 168, Bert, 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 with Bert Kreischer. This album, man. This album. Over and out. Here you go.